It's showtime.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are off and running on this 17th day of December 2020. We're 4 days away from the winter solstice, one of the happiest days of the year. And I am indeed lucky. You'll notice this program is, because, well, I didn't say it yet, but this program's live. Somehow or another, and I don't know how, but damned if I'm not impressed, we dodged the ice storm. I know there are people listening to this program going, shut the fuck up, Bob. We're up to our eyeballs in snow and ice. But we're not. Somehow or another, West Virginia, or at least this part of West Virginia, got a little freaking break for a change, which is truly refreshing. We never got the ice. We got a few snow flurries. Mostly we got rain. Just rain. Just kept raining. It's like Greg Lake sings in I Believe in Father Christmas, but instead it just kept on raining, a veil of tears for the virgin birth. I Believe in Father Christmas is one of my favorite contemporary Christmas carols, but yeah, that's me. In part because it's got a beautiful passage from Prokofiev in it, but wow, that's just too much detail for the beginning of the program. What am I doing? Hi, I'm Bob, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and thorns? We got them. Oh, yes, we do. The crown of thorns, the hell with that. We got enough for an entire suit of armor of thorns to get us through this evening. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. So thanks go out. Thanks go out this evening to our partial sponsors for the 17th day of December. That means thanks to Nancy. Thanks to Laborman. Thank you both very kindly indeed. And by the way, Brother Deacon Ace's challenge is still on the table for this evening, so we can go. We can get a head start on that. Brother Deacon Asa put up a $20 challenge last night, and hopefully that will be met. Where do we stand? Well, we are at $380 to go. $380, and we are done up to this part of the week. And, whew, I got a terrifying bill I have to pay as soon as the program's over. So I hope we make it to our fundraising goal, and that way we don't have some great big whopping humongous Friday on the Front Porch community made miracle to sweat tomorrow. But it was a gray but pleasant day. It was a pleasant day in Mount Colby gone. Oh, God, I was introduced to that animated series, Big Mouth, and there was a passage that featured Garrison Keillor, and, well, just don't. Agnes is all excited for the season-ending finale. How about that, season-ending finale? As opposed, I suppose, to a season-extending finale? No. But it won't happen till tomorrow, but the season finale of The Mandalorian, she's terribly, terribly worried about the child. So it is kind of weird, though. Randy in PA tells me that where he is in the greater Philly area, they got 3/8 of an inch of ice on top of 5 inches of snow, and reminds me that the greater Boston area apparently got clobbered. And, well, I didn't need snow boots today so much as I needed to make sure they were waterproof, because we are thoroughly saturated. Everywhere you step here, it squishes. It's like the temperate rainforest here is trying to do its best impression of a tropical rainforest. It's just wet. But it's not so terrible here in the studio. We've gotten it all the way up to 58 degrees. My tank just burned out in perfect timing. So maybe that'll be an excuse for me to get the lovely Agnes back here. Y'all seemed to enjoy that last night. Anyway, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. We got $380 to raise. And we'll see how it goes from there. LOL from Darlene in Connecticut. But without the child, there is no show. I still can't find the damn show on my smart TV. Oh, well. Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. That's part of the problem. We share passwords here. Shh, Agent Fred, for God's sakes, don't tell. And so I do some online subscriptions. Other family members subscribe to other things, and then we swap passwords. And that's how we manage. That's how Agnes has managed to find out about the child. Yes, Randy, absolutely. And all the children are not white, Garrison Keillor.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's enough for a... yeah, I get it. So, anyway, before we jump into the fever swamp of Thorn in the Side Thursday, before we don our suit of thorns, a few notes. Kyle says, you may have covered this last night. I haven't listened to last night's show at all yet, but I can't be the only one who's hoping the orange asshole actually tries to stay in the White House past noon on 1/20/21. I know it won't happen, but I really want to see his ass dragged out of there. You left out the kicking and screaming part, Kyle, but yes. Or maybe not kicking and screaming. Maybe instead with a straight jacket and one of those lovely Hannibal Lecter face guard thingies. That's what Make America Great Again sounds like with a hockey puck in your mouth. I could do that all day. That may become a problem. But at least it'll replace the cucumbers. Oh, Jesus. Somebody. Cucumber update. I heard from one of our daughters that some wise-ass faked a Kroger app page, home, fresh fruits and vegetables, fresh vegetables, cucumber. And there's a picture of the cucumber. One count with the UPC code, and then the next one it says, ingredients, cucumber. Nutrifacts, based on USDA foodopedia.com, basic cucumber, 1 cup sliced, raw. Allergen info, undeclared, does not contain declaration obligatory allergens. Disclaimer, actual product packaging and materials may have been used as an adult toy in both, which could result in STIs and STD infections. It's really, really real. And it has taken at least southern West Virginia by storm. And the Horn Community congregation as well. I don't know. You know what? I don't know that you could bet that in the United States, but the bookies in the UK, Randy Radar, will take anything. Randy Radar wants to know, can you place a fin bet on Trump being naked when he's dragged out of the White House? Nobody wants to see that, Randy. It all the networks would have to just pixelate it. And then, you know, given his massive bulk and girth, it'd be nothing but pixels. Let's see here. Steve in New York asking me that if I've nothing's going into Venmo, Steve. I don't know why, but it's at Bob-Kincaid-1. So I don't know quite what the situation is. Back to things we begin the program with. Bob! Bye-bye, Betsy. A Russian lullaby. Last night, Billable Rick was wondering about another name for QAnon that may have been bandied about the Head On Live network, and I do believe a couple of weeks ago that none other than Giraffe offered up, because Giraffe, the moniker, QAnonsense. Well, let Jeffrey speak for himself. Q, here he comes now. Jeffrey shares a few clues about Q. Yes, I believe that these Q folks are very much like the local rubes or country bumpkins that infiltrate perfectly sound communities, so I refer to them as cubes. Thank you, Jeffrey, I'm sure. I have no doubt Jeffrey will have further observations or Q-tips later. Maybe that was it, their Q-tips. And I heard on last night's program that Agnes is smitten with Brad Pitt. No, she is not smitten with Brad Pitt. Y'all just live to try to get me in trouble. She is just particularly fond of the appearance of Brad Pitt in that adorable short leather skirt in Troy. He leaps around a lot and flaps and flops and no, not that flaps and flops. Now quit it. God, it's like I'm in charge of my own execution or something. I heard on last night's show, Joey writes, that Agnes is smitten with Brad Pitt. Brad Pitt was born in Oklahoma but grew up in nearby Springfield, Missouri. Unfortunately, Josh Hawley, also mentioned on last night's show, was raised in Missouri. But I'm quite sure Agnes is not smitten with Josh Hawley. No, not even a little bit. She's negative. It's a negative smiting where he's concerned. In fact, I bet Agnes just might smite Josh Hawley. Figuratively and metaphorically, of course, Agent Fred. Yes, Jeffrey. Giraffrey snorts. I wish Agnes, or anybody for that matter, would just haul off and smite Josh Hawley. Why, that way we could refer to him as Smoot Hawley. I knew that sooner or later there would be a Smoot Hawley reference.
Well, he's smited. His peppercorns will fall off tonight, so there we go.
Okay, Agnes has officially, yeah, she said his peppercorns will fall off tonight. That big, are they? Peppercorns. Yeah.
I don't know. I've never looked. But
nor would any self-respecting. Right. Yes. Never mind.
I'm just saying.
Wouldn't that be Smoot Hawley? Huh? Oh, I fear we have angered poor Giraffery. He seems to be in a sparring mood.
Tell Job.
Giraffery.
Thank you, because I can't talk while I'm changing gas. Tell him he's a good giraffe and it'll be okay.
Jeffrey is a wonderful giraffe, yes. Well then, 'tis the season, so maybe somebody would just rather deck the holly, fa-la-la-la-la. Oh. Bob, tomorrow is Brad Pitt's birthday.
Poor Sparta.
So I would suggest that you make a trip to the nearest accessible Rippy Mart and, well, you know, make a pit stop. Oh. Yeah, stop by and buy a cute little cupcake with a candle and celebrate Brad's birthday with Agnes.
Oh, no, I want...
What giraffe? Yes, Bob, I think Agnes would be thrilled with a cupcake on Brad's birthday, and for your efforts, I think Agnes might just have some pie for you.
I don't think so. I want Brad Pitt out here dressed like he was in Troy painting my house.
Yeah, and a stick of butter, right?
With a stick of butter, yes.
Brad Pitt, stick of butter.
Well, actually, Channing Tatum.
I know, Channing Tatum, stick of butter. Channing Tatum, stick of butter.
Yeah.
She says that in her sleep sometimes, Channing Tatum, stick of butter.
Well, that's my elf. That's my elf coming out. I like dogs.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
On this day in 1903, the Wright brothers finally got their project off the ground as their homemade plane finally took flight near Kitty Hawk. I had a kitty one time, Joey says, who got into a fight with a hawk, and the kitty fared well and lived to tell about it. Speaking of fight and flight, ever since the day of the Wright brothers' first flight, both Dayton, Ohio and Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, have been fighting over who established the original museum. And now, of course, Giraffe flies off the handle. Where are you going?
I got work to do.
You didn't even say goodbye.
You were busy. You were narrating, and I didn't...
They like you.
I love you all, too.
Protect the child.
Protect the child. Protect the Agnes. Agnes can get out of here and go do what she's got to do.
Make a little more racket, dear.
Bite me, Bob.
Bear it, babe.
Shut up, Bob.
I'm not the one that said bite me.
That was metaphorically.
Oh, that was a metaphorical bite.
Yes.
We got a lot of metaphors banging around this evening. Giraffe flies off the handle. Yes, who knows? Who actually has the rights to the original museum? As that question is still up in the air. Giraffe would know a little bit about being up in the air. Thank you, Jeffrey. In 1968, Tiny Tim married Miss Vicky on The Tonight Show, which reminds me, whatever happened to our Miss Vicky from PA? We have to finish that story. Well, I was originally confused. I thought that was the Miss Vicky, but no, we weren't. Then there's the imminent departure of another Grinch by the name of Betsy DeVos. Yes, Betsy the Bitch, a real thorn in the side and general pain in the ass, will soon be leaving a place she should never have entered, considering her total lack of credentials. This piece of garbage was barely qualified to be a babysitter. Just an opinion, but I really believe that if there is one department position in the U.S. government where one should have to have achieved Ph.D. status, I tend to think being the Secretary of Education would be that position. That's a little sexist calling her a bimbo, Joey, but it's true, she does barely have a high school degree. Jeffrey, meanwhile, is thinking societally. DeVos is a socialite who flunked social studies and became sociopath. Yes, thank you, Jeffrey. I know somebody who would qualify for that position, and that's Dr. Jill Biden. More on Dr. Jill Biden later. DeVos used her position to graft billions of dollars from college students with so many self-serving bad policies. She's lobbied Congress to strip college students of protection from for-profit predatory colleges, which would place these students in difficult financial straits. So much so that many of these students can't afford the American dream of buying a home or having a family in their 20s. All the while, the DeVos family owns and runs a predatory school loan company, which is a total conflict of interest. Then she pushed to have children return to school, all while attempting to divert for PPE from public to private schools. This bastion of evil couldn't have cared less about the lives of children in the public school systems, even as some children died. She is, in fact, a real sicko. And recently, a congressman from California, Jared Huffman, reiterated a statement that he made nearly 4 years ago when he said, "Betsy DeVos is as dumb as a box of hammers." When someone suggested to Huffman that he should apologize, Huffman had a classic line. Yes, I should apologize, because to compare DeVos to a box of hammers was an insult to hammers. Way to go, Jared Huffman. You're my kind of guy. I find it interesting that with all the innovations and involvements, that this administration had with the Russians, maybe it was no coincidence that a hammer was invoked, considering the fact that the national symbol for Soviet Russia was the hammer and sickle. Not anymore, of course, but back in Soviet days, yes, hammer and sickle. Because those were two classic symbols of industry versus and agriculture. Oddly enough, many such symbols appear on American flags. The West Virginia flag, for instance, has a miner and a farmer on it. Mm-hmm. Jeffrey concludes, yes, the hammer and sickle, a Russian symbol. So how nice it was to see Representative Huffman. Wait for it. Yes. How nice it was to see Representative Huffman hammer the sicko. All right, that's worth a full jingle. Finally, speaking from Russia with love, on this day in 2006, Russians had a memorial for the nearly 250 news reporters who had either disappeared or been killed from the time period at 1993 to 2006. See, in Russia, when the government wants a story killed, they don't just kill the story, they kill the reporter. I'm sure Bob knows of this story, having worked at CNN in the 90s, 80s. And I wonder, Bob, did CNN have a Russia bureau? Yes, it did. In point of fact, I applied to work there shortly before deciding to go to law school instead. And in order to work the Moscow bureau, you had to have a full psychological workup just to make sure you could make it through the long, 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 dark days of a Muscovite winter. Mm-hmm. This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 17th day of December, 2020, with Giraffe hammering on the folks in Georgia to get involved and get out the vote on January 5th so we don't end up like Russia. And thank you, Lou in PA. You have Lou has provided our January 5th Georgia runoff reminder. That's the day, of course, of the special runoff elections for Senate in Georgia, upon which the future of countless tens, if not hundreds of millions of Americans depend, and which will be the linchpin to whether or not we can actually start making the necessary changes to return to some semblance of normality from the madness of the last 4 years of the White House being infested by maggots. Mm-hmm. Well, I figured that would happen sooner or later. Steve, speaking for the gay community, and not just the gay community in the Horn Family Community Congregation, but in the entire world, I suppose. Steve says, subject line, Brad Pitt, I'd be happy with a cupcake on Thelma and Louise Brad Pitt's butt. And probably singing happy birthday to me, happy birthday to me. Things are just falling all over the place this evening. You'd almost swear that maybe there was an earthquake or something. There went the cowbell. There went my pepper mill. Yes, I have a pepper mill in the studio. I often dine here. But, okay, everything's back in its orderly place. Billable Rick says, cowbells for Jeffrey and his master's journal. I think Jeffrey's going to take exception to that, umbrage even. You don't want to see what happens when a giraffe takes umbrage. These are gems, says Billable. I wish Agnes or anybody for that matter would just haul off and smite Josh Hawley. Yes, who knows who actually has the rights to the original museum, as that question is still up in the air. Hell, North Carolina to this day has first in flight on its license plates, and it pisses Ohio right the hell off. And yes, cowbell for California Congressman Jared Huffman's bags of hammers comment about Betsy DeGraft. And there, of course, is another cowbell for Betsy DeGraft. Well played, Billable Rick. Well played. Flavio, pixels, lots of pixels. And what if the orange one pooped his diapers? Would that be a biohazard? No, but you just did a number on dinner in the Eastern Standard Time Zone, Flavio. That's on you, not me, my friend. I'm just saying, Silent R Lamar, on the grounds of just starting some shit, I've been hearing that Russia's been swanning throughout government agencies. Could the firing of the national security dude for telling the truth have something to do with that? There are no coincidences with this gang of punks and thugs and foot pads and cut purses and sneak thieves and highwaymen robbers laying in ditches and suck-ups and lick spittles. No coincidences. No, I won't clarify on that. It's too... I'm trying to have a little dignity here, Silent R. And thanks for being first past the post and right out of the gate, Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you so much, Jeremy. We are now down to 375 to get finished with fundraising all the way up to this here Thursday. Okay? So, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Well, okay. Again, it's on Flavio. Billable Rick says, damn it, Bob. Flavio just ruined my late lunch here in Southern California with his Diaper Donald comment. Pass the eye bleach, please. Brain bleach, too. Brr, yuck. So, a couple of things. One, it was either last night that I remarked that we can fully expect the various and sundry maggot bunches to do whatever they can to ruin the inauguration of Joe Biden. Well, on January the 20th, 2021, The Secret Service's primary mission will be to protect the President of the United States, and as of about 12:01, it won't be Donald Trump anymore. But I mentioned that they would do that, and then lo and behold, within less than 24 hours' time, it turns out, I was right again. Coming off their successful domestic terrorist display of a weekend or so back, last weekend, you know, in which they stole the private property of African-American churches in D.C., namely their Black Lives Matter banners and signs, and then burned them in front of the houses of worship themselves. Well, and with little or nothing having happened to any of them for doing that. That's some privilege, that white privilege. Well, over at the Sun, they reported that the Proud Boys, man, you reckon there's somebody at the Sun listens to this program? I don't know. Members of the Proud Boys are reportedly plotting to disguise themselves as Joe Biden supporters in an attempt to wreak havoc during the presidential inauguration. The Trojan horse-style plot was revealed on InfoWars alum Joe Biggs' YouTube channel, on which the right-wing militants were ordered to kick off this presidency with fucking fireworks. I mean, the Sun didn't print the word fucking. They spelled it with F and an asterisk and C-K-I-N-G, but I feel pretty good guessing that that's a U and not an asterisk. Enrique Tarrio, the head of the Proud Boys, said, revolt, motherfuckers. Do whatever you got to do to fucking get your tickets. You show up there in Biden gear and you turn his inauguration into a fucking circus, a sign of resistance, a sign of revolution. Told you. When you're part of the Horn Family Community Congregation, you actually live in the future in regards to everything except lottery numbers and horse race results. A lot of this crap went down on a YouTube video podcast, which it amazes me is still up at YouTube. Thanks, Mr. Google, called, wait for it, the War Boys. War Boys, Episode 11. Right. Th- These people. Do you suppose... What would happen if somebody instructed law enforcement to show no quarter? Or, never mind, you don't have to use a complicated phrase like no quarter. Just tell the cops, pretend all these white people are black. If they were under orders like that, the Proud Boys wouldn't even show up. They'd be so goddamn scared. They don't want to. No, they don't. They don't want to be treated like they've wanted other people to be treated. Let's check in on some of the fun.
What's going on, man? It's been a while. We got everybody back together. It's been quite an interesting week or so, to say the least. Lots happened since our last episode, and I guess one of the main things to jump into. Well, Enrique, you can only be here for about 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, I could only be on this for about 15 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Your mom's car got stolen, right?
It's not my mom's car. Okay, I told you not to say that before we started this.
I'm just playing. It's not your mom's car.
If only we all did what we were.
All right, whatever, dude. It's my mom's car. Okay, it's my fucking mom's car. That's it.
All right. So you were just in Georgia for one of the many Stop the Steal rallies that are happening all over the country.
Skip a bit, brother.
You already got the car. Why are you breaking the window? But yeah, they took my plate carrier.
Oh, damn it.
Yeah, I know.
That's the most devastating part of the whole story, I think.
The most devastating. You know,
now we've taken a turn for the worst.
No,
take
actually,
my mom's car, but don't take my kids.
I was more worried. I was actually more worried about my fucking sunglasses that I left in the car. I just bought the bitches. It's the car. The insurance would have paid for the car.
Now I'm just curious. Is there like overlap between Proud Boys and Boogaloo Boys and incels? I mean, does the place where they all meet, is that all just a single, if it was a Venn diagram, would it just be a single circle? Sincerely, what a gang of pathetic assholes.
To avoid seeing friends and family. The incident has prompted even some of his supporters to question his judgment and privilege the same day a Sutter County judge finalized the ruling saying he overstepped with some of his executive orders. So there's a fucking picture of this dickhead with a bunch of fucking people out at some party, some hoity-toity ass fucking party. Where's that fucking picture at, man?
You sent it to me? Oh, okay, hold on.
You have the picture?
I have the picture. I got to show it on
camera. Awesome. Yeah. Show the picture.
Okay. At least we know for one thing, it ain't professional broadcasting. Of course it's his mom's car, says Steve in New York. The asshole lives in her basement and broadcasts in the basement of the science building. Science? Really? But no, they are. They really are. They're planning a domestic terrorism action on the Biden inauguration, January 20th. And yet yesterday we had audio from people calling for martial law. Well, if there was martial law, what would happen to the... never mind, it's entirely too confusing for the likes of them. As to overlap, Jack in Shreveport says, I was thinking about overlap between days of shows, especially overlap of today with Moran Monday. Well, philosophically, I think that actually happens a little bit from time to time. But in Joey's journal, we had mention of Dr. Jill Biden. The maggots have been absolutely having a shit hemorrhage over the fact that Jill Biden holds an advanced terminal doctoral degree. She's got a doctorate in education. It started when the Wall Street Journal, on their toxic opinion page, attacked Dr. Biden. But, of course, the National Review took it down to negative 11 because it's the National Review. I mean, this is, of course, the bastion of conservative thought that back in the days of the civil rights movement invade almost hourly against the protection of already secured rights for African Americans. And so that would be Kyle Smith at National Review. Kyle Smith is nominally the film critic for National Review. I think the last film that they liked over there was Triumph of the Will. Kyle Smith remarking, "As for Biden, she spent a lot of time teaching remedial English to slow learners in community colleges." And I guess that's supposed to be over in maggot white wing world. That's supposed to be some sort of sick burn. I mean, why would you, why on earth would anybody who actually has any self-respect spend any time at all teaching remedial reading to slow learners in community colleges? And just how is it that he can make the connection between slow learners and community colleges? I wonder where film critic Kyle Smith attended school. Well, we know one thing. He damn sure doesn't have any advanced degrees. No master's, no PhD, no ED. Well, he may have ED. I mean, he is a maggot. But he doesn't have an ED. He announced the upcoming screed against Jill Biden by tweeting, "You're going to love my next piece. It's so mean." Yeah. And among other people responding to it pointed out that, curiously, the National Review had never done a column about, say, Seb Gorka. Seb Gorka, he claims to be in possession of a PhD, but his own PhD advisor said he was inept. Or then again, there's the PhD of former House Speaker Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, who got a PhD in European history. This topic is just, boy, wow. Belgian education policy in the Congo, 1945 to 1960. That was the dissertation that kept him from having to actually serve his country in Vietnam. Because, of course, and nothing that Kyle, what was his name again? Kyle Smith never wrote a column about the fact that melanoma Naus, it became melanoma Trump, entered this country on an Einstein visa, which is supposed to be reserved for people of genuine genius. When, well, I think we figured out what it was that she was really good at. So expect more of this. Think of it as the Hillarization of Dr. Jill Biden. Right. And by the way, call the Wambulance and maybe get a fainting couch for little Marco Rubio. He's done. He's probably under the fainting couch up at the ancestral estate of Smoldering Chode with precious Lady G. Lindsey Graham. Why? Because an incoming member of the Biden administration. Get the kids out of the room. She used the F bomb. The F word. Oh, my God. They are in a complete state of high dudgeon over in maggot world. What they're worked up about is Jen O'Malley Dillon, or her comment. The plan is for Jen O'Malley Dillon, who is set to be one of the highest ranking female advisors to Joe Biden. And she was talking about the hope that her boss has of trying to make this country into a more perfect union instead of spending 4 years dividing the country like Nitwit Nero did. And what Jen O'Malley Dillon said was, the president-elect was able to connect with people over this sense of unity. In the primary, people would mock him like, you think you can work with Republicans? And then Jen O'Malley Dillon crossed the line, apparently. You think you can work with Republicans? And she said, replying, I'm not saying they're not a bunch of fuckers. Mitch McConnell's terrible. But this sense that you couldn't wish for that, you couldn't wish for this bipartisan ideal, he rejected that. From start to finish, he set out with this idea that unity was possible, that together we are stronger, that we as a country need healing, and our politics needs that too. Which is not to say it's easy. It's like a relationship. You can't do politics alone. If the other person isn't willing to do the work, then that becomes really hard. But I think more than not, people want to see impact. They want to see us moving in a path forward. They want to do their work, get paid a fair share, have time for themselves and their family, and see each other as neighbors. And this overhang of this negative polarized electorate that politics has created is the thing that I think we can break down. That's her fuckers comment in context. You know, every time you catch a Republican actually saying what they think out loud, they say, oh, you took me out of context. Well, they did exactly that to Jen O'Malley Dillon. Yes, she did say, I'm not saying they're not a bunch of fuckers, which is kind of a messy syntax, but she's saying that, yeah, they apparently can be a bunch of fuckers. She didn't say rat fuckers or parent fuckers or beast of the field fuckers. A bunch of fuckers. By the way, don't anybody tell, that's actually how Washington talks. And I'll bet you even little Marco Rubio talks that way. But the general thrust of what she's saying is that it is possible to move this country forward if people want to work together in good faith. But all they heard over in maggot land was, bunch of fuckers! And maybe that tells you a little bit about how actually obscene the maggots are. Not that we needed further evidence. We've got 4 years worth. Thanks. And so there was little Marco Rubio, positively leaping all the way out of the lifts in his shoes. And so Marco Rubio via Twitter said, Biden talks about unity and healing, but you want to know what they really think? Read how the person he wants to be the next White House Deputy Chief of Staff called Republicans in Congress a bunch of fuckers. Hey, Marco, if you don't want to be called a bunch of fuckers, quit acting like a bunch of fuckers. Even that. Criticizing Jen O'Malley Dillon for using an F word that probably springs from the lips of the entire Republican caucus every 15 seconds displays the fact that, well, you're that. So yeah, crank up the whambulance and get some smelling salts for Marco and Lindsay, because I'm sure Lindsay is equally disgusted. I tell you, I am disgusted. I am shocked to find out that anybody uses such salty and unladylike language. Right. Because, of course. Now, just by way of reminder, Marco Rubio was nowhere to be found when one of his own colleagues from the Florida delegation in the House referred to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as a fucking bitch. Nope. Marco Rubio had not a word to say about that. I mean, he didn't even send out a, I'm going to pray for Ted Yoho to be forgiven by sweet fake baby Jesus. Nope. Not even. Karen Tumulty, writing at the Washington Post, had a delightful time suggesting that someone should get Marco Rubio a cold compress. Oh, the horror, she wrote. At a moment when the country faces a set of crises unlike any we have seen in many generations, Biden and his team want to get things done. They also recognize that doing so will require some give and take given today's political environment. And Ms. Tumulty then pointed out the ultimate reality of this, that it is a gender-laced controversy attack that is right in line with the hyperventilated conniption over Jill Biden referring to herself by the title that her degree entitles her to use. Expect this to not ever, ever, ever go away. Cold compress for Marco, Steve in New York points out. It'll help pop and drain the large abscess between his ears. Yeah, they make breams. Subject line, Kyle. Jack says, I saw tweets that Kyle Dickhead went to Yale. Yeah, he did. I didn't verify it, but I figured it would be a Yale legacy admission. Yeah, Smith. Yeah, he did go to Yale. And in fact, he started pissing and moaning about going to Yale the minute that anybody dared to criticize his sleazy attack on Jill Biden. Jesus, I told you there were thorns. I warned you. And so there was further talk today about the possibility of a stimulus bill coming along that would give every American $600. Hell, George W. Bush gave people $343. Or something like that. A whole $600. Don't spend it all in one place, America. Mm-hmm. But Republicans are always worried about and thinking about and taking into consideration the moral aspects of And the moral damage and moral hazard and harm that might attend giving every American $600. And so the people negotiating on the Republican side, and I use the term people loosely, want to make sure that nobody who's getting unemployment insurance federally can get the $600. Yeah. Ashley Schapitl, spokesperson for Senate Finance Committee Democrats, said, imagine thinking someone who's trying to pay the rent and buy food with $100, $200, or $300 a week is going to live high on the hog because they get an extra one-time $600. Well, those are the kinds of things that Republicans think about. It was Senate Majority Whip John Thune of South Dakota, a state burning up with COVID because the governor there, Kristi Noem, is a bioterrorist, said, there could be language in the deal aimed at addressing concerns that people who receive both enhanced unemployment benefits and stimulus checks would be getting a double benefit. How is it a double benefit if you take all the money together and it still won't meet your monthly bills? Democrats do say that they can keep this this ignorant, vicious provision out of whatever's going to be a final bill, if indeed there's going to be a final bill. Robert Reich jumped in, and he said, funny enough, they never take issue with doubling down on corporate bailouts and tax cuts for the wealthy. No, they never met a tax cut for the rich that they didn't like. And that harkens back to the study released from the London School of Economics that shows that massive tax cuts for the rich never, ever, 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 ever trickle down. Well, that was just the fantasy and the fairy story that Republicans told to get the rubes to buy in. What? They're going to give me $343 because Republicans care about America. It's all just always a matter of Lucy holding the football and pulling it away at the last moment. Senator Ron Wyden, senior senator from Oregon, said, this is a cruel last-ditch effort by Senate Republicans to scale back real aid for families. There's no reason whatsoever to pay for relief checks by cutting the incomes of jobless workers. We obviously wouldn't set an arbitrary date to cut off access to the vaccine while COVID is still raging, so why does Mitch McConnell get to sabotage the economic recovery by cutting support for working people and setting arbitrary expirations? Not a lot in the way of answers there. Bernie, speaking to the question, said there's simply not enough money in the proposal to deal with the unprecedented crises that we now face. It is no secret to anybody that right now at this moment in America, we face the worst set of crises that this country has seen in perhaps 100 years. This bill has a lot in it that's good, but given the enormity of the crises that we face, it simply does not go anywhere near far enough, and we're going to fight for more. Fight on, Bernie. Fight on. It simply baffles me that we live in a country where when other developed countries like Canada have just said, nope, you get everybody gets a check to stay afloat for as long as this goes on. And Canada, while it has sources of wealth, is not nearly as wealthy as the United States. Italy has tried to take care of its people. Germany, France, not so sure about the UK. Australia, who got a lot of this right, tried to take care of the people. But in the United States, we gave people, American citizens, struggling to keep their families alive, $1,200 and said, good luck with all that. And you cannot lay not one iota of the problem at the doorstep of the Democrats. It was May of 2020 when the House passed the HEROES Act to build on what had previously been passed. And it was, and once it was passed the House, it was walked over to the Senate and it was placed on the desk of Mitch McConnell, where it began to immediately gather dust and soak up blood from the puddles that sit on his desk. Jesus. Steve pointing out in New York, the states and cities need funds. I've directed my employer to direct all withholding to the New York State and New York City and stop sending money to the federal government. I will bear the consequences next year. Because states and cities have been left flapping in the breeze, especially if they are states and cities that are not unabashedly worshipful of Julius Caesar. Can we move on? Steve continues. Can we move on to food porn or something? We've been beating this dead horse for so long. Nothing is new or surprising. I hate to be this way, but what's the point? We just need to start worrying how we take care of each other about this. We're talking about and blathering about people who don't care and won't change. Sorry to be so nihilist, but really, what's the use? Well, a blessed and solemn advent to you too, Steve. The use and the point of all of this is to constantly remind and re-remind each other, ourselves, our community, that this ain't A, this ain't normal. Even in a pandemic, this ain't normal. It is brutal and hateful to torment and torture people who are already living under a daily existential crisis, wondering if their next breath will be the one that sucks in enough coronavirus particles to put paid to them and their lifelong journey on this little blue marble, this little time machine hurtling in its helical path around the sun, through the galaxy, and through the universe. We dare not look away. Because when you look away, that's when they do their worst. I hope people are motivated by accounts of this viciousness, this utter callous disregard for the well-being of the citizenry of this country, that among other things, they will work tirelessly and do whatever they can to help take the Senate back so that we're not constantly sweating over some shitty little $600 check. And I realize that by saying some shitty little $600 check, that in a way, well, it could be taken that I'm minimizing the suffering of others. I am not. But when you've got someone, a family that's starving, saying, here's a single saltine, split it up amongst you and make it last a while. Well, that's not just mean. That's sadistic. That's hurting people because you enjoy hurting people. And that's the Republican Party. Maybe that's what Jen O'Malley Dillon should have done. Maybe she should have said, well, you know, I'm not saying that they don't just sit around hurting people because they like to hurt people. Oh, but no, the ambulance would have been necessary to be called for that too, wouldn't it? She says we hurt people just to be hurting them. We hurt people because it's good. It's good for the people who pay us to run for office. There's a big difference, Jen O'Malley Dillon, damn it. Food porn? You want to move on to food porn? We can move on to food porn. And for that matter, last night, yesterday, I mean, it's that time of year, it's dark outside for me. But in yesterday's program, I filibobstered for 3 solid hours. That's not how this program is supposed to work. This is conversation radio. So, you know, if you've got something you want to get said, if you be under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle, call in. I'd be glad to hear from you. Over on Skype, it's Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn. And the stress line, of course, is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And then, of course, there's 304-574-8178. That rings in on the Skype line. And any of those will get you right into the program. A couple of notes. Hey, oh, that's good. Cowbell for Jimmy in the Great Northwest. The last movie the National Review liked was Birth of a Nation, based upon that famous and extremely popular at the time novel, The Klansman. Albert in Rhode Island says, Bob, whenever I hear about money trickling down, it reminds me of a quote from the outlaw Josie Wales. It was, don't piss on my back and tell me it's raining. Wow, my Clint Eastwood is perilously close to my Donald Trump, isn't it? Now, Clint did have a debate with an empty chair, so maybe it suits. Stimulus and relief packages, Jack in Shreveport says, the Republicans never allow a large enough amount of spending to make a stimulus work. They wouldn't agree to enough during Obama's presidency, and the stimulus didn't work properly, and then they blamed the Democrats. Precisely. I mean, that's how the scam works, Jack. For Republicans, at least, that's a feature, not a flaw. Stop it, Bob. If you fill a bobster for 3 hours, it does not happen without you. Just saying, says Lee. I do this program, Lee, hoping for conversation. I do not wish to monopolize it. Oh, God, shame on me. But I just think we need to be armored against what's coming. Let's run over to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda for a moment. Harris Faulkner is emerging over there as the official attack dog against the Biden administration. I've seen a couple of clips of her. But after 4 years of Nitwit Nero saying things like Covfefe and Melania's son and things there are too many of them to list. God bless the United States of America. Harris Faulkner has the unmitigated gall to question the mental acuity of Joe Biden. Get the hockey puck.
What other people in the party might think of Republicans or what they might think of Mitch McConnell, Joe Biden is going to try to work with Republicans and Mitch McConnell.
This, by the way, is Democratic strategist Brad Woodhouse, who decided somewhere along the way that he would take the coin and he would show up to be the whipping boy on segments on Fox. Now, just by way of explanation, there's a good living to be made doing shit like that. Fox News pays well. And all you have to do, all you have to do to get the check that clears, all in the world you have to do is agree that the Fox News TV host, no matter how good your argument, always gets the last word. Because, see, the people at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda understand the rules of primacy and recency. People tend to remember what they hear first and what they hear last. And so every segment that might even have a fire-breathing liberal in it, every segment begins with the point being made, the Republican point being made by the host, and every segment ends with the host making the point again, so that whatever the liberal was saying is just sort of lost in the ether. And so there's Brad Woodhouse. They were discussing Jen O'Malley Dillon, referring to the Republican, to some Republicans as fuckers, which, you know, they are. But we're going to transition from that to another topic.
Joe Biden.
She just said Mitch McConnell.
No, I'm together.
I'm going to step in here, Brad. I'm curious because I've heard you get kind of loud. You cut in. I put all of that in the same category as cussing. You lose the argument when you do that. So I'm a little confused how she's going to serve a boss with unity, but can't clean up her language so that she doesn't.
She can't clean up her language
with her words. I got to move to this.
I have no interest.
More gaffes for Joe Biden. As he has pronounced the Senate candidate John Ossoff's name at a Georgia campaign event and raised some eyebrows. Watch.
Honk for your next.
Brad.
Well, I don't know. What are we doing? We're making fun of somebody who's had a lifelong stutter. I don't really think that's a. I don't think that's
like,
a good
like you guys
look.
Did I mean, to Melania Trump. I guess.
You mean Melania Trump when she plagiarized Michelle Obama? Is that what you're referring to? I'm not
no,
sure.
I'm
you're
saying
referring
you all
to
made
other
fun of
than,
people from other countries if they're on a particular side of the aisle, which is very unfair and is not something we should be doing in this country.
So I don't think you want to bring up
respect.
I don't think you want to bring up the woman who plagiarized the previous first lady and then destroyed the White House Rose Garden. If that's your best argument, I think you should probably find something else. Look, this idea that somehow we should make fun of someone who mispronounces someone's name, who's, by the way, in the public
speaking. You know, Brad, it isn't about making fun. It has to do with, and look, I mean, we have people in my own family who struggle with stuttering. This
oh,
is not what
well.
This is about. There are questions about whether or not he's present in those moments, and you can deem that unfair.
You can't be serious. You can't be serious that you're trying to talk about his mental acuity because, you know, we've got some complicated
names. I didn't say
that. Well, then what are you referring to being present?
I'm referring to the people who have said it.
Well, those people are up to no good. I mean, this is someone, by the way, he was present enough to defeat Donald Trump in every single debate and defeat him in the polls. So I think he's present enough
defeat
to be president of the United States.
Man.
Yeah. If you look,
all right, last words,
Brad,
Deanna Caldwell, you've got 10 seconds.
10 seconds, Brian, your rationale is.
Yeah, notice the right wing guest. And in this case, they found that they found another one of those African Americans for Trump. And this is the guy who isn't Diamond or Silk. So primacy and recency and everything that Brad Woodhouse said just floats away. But that's where we are, and they're going to talk about Joe Biden being senile for the next 4 years. Even if he walked to a podium, stood behind the microphone, and recited the definition of pi perfectly to the 2,000th freaking decimal place, was he present? Was he present? You know, eat shit and bark at the moon, Harris Faulkner. See, they're not civil. They don't really want to be civil. Nope. Absolutely not. You can't be civil with the likes of them. The only way to deal with them is to beat them and then keep on beating them. Oh my God. Hey, Skeeve.
Blob, what's shaking, raw dog?
Oh, I don't know it, Gordo. I just know it's going to be a long damn time before we eat a cucumber around here that wasn't grown in our garden.
Oh, my God. E. coli salad, man. You don't want it. I'd stay away.
Like Arnold said, it's hell when your lips turn numb.
So how you making out, brother? You doing okay?
Yeah, you know what? I'm just, it's kind of cold, kind of gray, kind of shitty, kind of miserable. But
yeah,
you know,
how was the
but
snow
you know
storm?
What?
Did it,
it no, we, it, no, we, it, it missed us. It no, good. No ice, no, nothing. It was wonderful.
Good. No white death. Excellent, man.
And on the other hand, you know, like I said, I've got this standing rule, that every snowfall before New Year's is beautiful. Every snowfall after New Year's is just a pain in the ass.
I'm at the age of maybe I'm cantankerous, but they're all a pain in the ass. I just don't like it anymore.
But there's a chance there's a slight chance here we may get snow on Christmas Day, and there's just enough of a traditionalist and a well camouflaged old romantic in me to think that that'll be kind of pretty and special.
That would be cool. Yeah, I could do a one-off on Christmas Day. Everybody's home. Nobody has a need to get out, and everybody should be home. But, you know, this orange bastard, there's so much stress in the air. I've talked to so many people today that are just either depressed or they're freaking out. And it's in the air. You could feel it, you know. I cannot wait. January the 20th is going to be better than Christmas Day. In fact, Karen and I have already decided we're not celebrating Christmas. We're going to celebrate January the 20th.
You know, that's probably a good call. I think it'd be a lovely, and we'll have a front porch that evening, and maybe y'all make a nice inauguration day. Well, like I've said before, January the 20th, 2021 is actually going to be the first day of 2021.
Yes.
So maybe make your corned beef and cabbage and your black-eyed peas on January the 20th.
There you go.
A little cornbread.
Yeah.
And see, we're doing food porn now, just like Steve in New York wanted.
You did a lot of heavy lifting last night, Bob, and, you know, I thought bad nobody was calling, but I just didn't have it in me. And we appreciate you, brother.
It's
love the filibusters, you know.
It's not like I limped out of here with one arm not working or something. I mean, it's okay. It's just a little weird when that happens. It's just strange.
But it's got to. Does it take a little bit out of you? I mean, it's got to, man.
They all do. They all do. But it's the nature of the process. I mean, when you do something like this and you're not sitting there with a script in front of you that's been written and rewritten 15 times before you go to air, and your three-hour program is actually 2 hours long because there's an hour of commercial tucked into it.
Right.
It's not quite as much of a challenge.
And you don't have a producer cramming calls down your throat every 5 minutes, you know, so you don't have that to contend with.
Yeah. So
it's all working out good.
But no, I feel like I'm monopolizing things when I go for 3 hours
that.
I'm afraid that somebody out there going, oh, I'd like to call, but you know, I don't want to interrupt Bob.
Don't feel that way, man. I can only speak for me, but I loved it when you go on those roles. I do, man. I thought last night was a very powerful show, and kudos to you, man.
Well, thank you, my brother. Thank you very kindly. So did y'all get iced? Did y'all get iced up?
We didn't get anything, not even some rain, except for a winter watch. I swear I think these weather folks like putting out these warnings just to get you to click so they can generate revenue.
Well, you know, Brother Deacon Asa said last night that he suspects that the weather forecasters collude with the grocery store lobby to build business.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's the milk and egg and bread producers.
Yeah, because that's the first thing to go, isn't it?
Absolutely.
First thing to go.
Especially anywhere behind the corn pone curtain. I've always wanted to just knock on doors and say, are y'all having a French toast feast today? Because that's what you make with milk and bread and eggs.
That's what you do, man. Let me throw out a Steve's Everybody Stressed Out $20 challenge, and we'll take it from there. Is that a good pivot point?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do that. Yeah, the people around here still have their Trump signs up.
Oh, I know.
They're not. Do you see that there too? That they're not going to let this go, man.
And every time I see it now, it's like some sort of neurological tick. I'll be in the car and I'll see. Take that damn thing off. The fucker lost. Or you know, I drove by a place over in Oak Hill today. That I mean, it's a business. It's some kind of something machinery. And there they are, you know, front of the building. Got a big old flagpole, and up on top, top of the flag, and this West Virginia, of course, they're flying the American flag. The next flag under that should be, by tradition, the flag of the state of West Virginia. Was it? Oh, hell no. It was their Trump 2020 flag.
Oh, my goodness. A business. A place of business. Now, I don't know what they sell, if it's widgets or whatever, but I would never patronize a place like that, ever. They would never see a nickel of my hard-earned
money. I love to patronize businesses. I walk in and say, oh, this is such a wonderful business. That's how you patronize a business.
Okay. Yeah, I little play on words there. Okay, you got me. You got me. I'm tired, man. Long day at the office.
No worries, brother. No worries.
Oh, man. But, yeah, they're still – they won't let this go. They won't let it go. And I guess they're banking on, and my neighbor's a teacher, they're banking on January 6th and this slate of electors, and it's not going to happen.
No.
It's not. Even Mitch came out and said, look, just be cool January 6th. Don't do anything. So without a senator, they got nothing.
No, they don't. If you were to suction out all the viciousness and hatred of the Republican Party, you could bury them in a matchbox.
Yeah. Yep, that's true. And I don't how's the mask wearing around there, Bob, in your area? Is it about 80%? Because here it's 50 at best, and that's very concerning.
Well, like I said the other night, it depends on where you are and where you go, because we get good masking at, I mean, once you got a discount for the old folks and whatnot and the morons who wear it just below their noses. I try to make sure that I stay, and I remember a couple of years back pissing and moaning about self-checkout. I have never been more grateful for self-checkout in my life.
Gives you a whole new appreciation for it, doesn't it?
You damn Skippy, it does. But so in big places, they'll wear their masks, because in big places, they got people at the doors watching you come in. So you got to have your mask on. But the convenience stores and gas stations and stuff are purely toxic.
Well, I had the tire indicator light come on today, and I went up to, you know, have them check it out. Nobody was wearing a mask. I waited outside in the cold. I wasn't going in that waiting room. No way, man. No way.
Well, that's the other thing. The smaller the space, the more dangerous the space.
That's right.
You know, like those little bitty waiting rooms that they have in tire shops and oil change places and like that. No. Because that little probably slightly larger than a solitary prison cell, those things, if you could somehow visualize the Rona inside them, it's probably like watching a room full of bees.
Well, yeah, it's all about the viral load. And I've heard that 1 in 20 are infected now. That's frightening.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've had an update from Paul from Parts Unknown, but I'm really, really curious.
Is he standing by?
No. He's not. Okay. No. I just meant it's been a while since we heard from him, and I'm curious to hear his thoughts be brought current, because the last time we heard from him, he said he would not be surprised to find that eventually in this country we get to 1 in 5.
My God, that's a scratch-off ticket odds, you know, to put it in those terms. What the hell are we going to do, just hole up at home?
And that's the dollar you don't want back. Well, I mean, there are hard lockdowns in other parts of the world. I heard from Chris in Germany. The lockdown was supposed to go into effect in Stuttgart. And even there, you've got mask whole COVIDiots in Germany, of all places. And they don't even have Trump flags to fly.
Right. To do this right, they need to pay everybody to stay at home. And we've hashed this over and over and over again.
Yeah, this is not complicated.
No, not at all. Not at all. And, you know, they were actually, and I'm sure you've talked about this, I was late to the party today, they were actually wanting herd immunity, this orange administration. That's what they were trying to perpetuate.
Exactly. Oh, I had a request from Megan. Are you getting my emails? Read this on air if you are.
Go ahead.
I'm getting
love
your Megan. We're getting
Hi, Megan.
I got your email.
Megan's cool, man. Go ahead, read it if you want to.
No, that's all there was to it.
Oh.
but
hi, Megan.
Yeah, hi, Megan. Thanks for the challenge. That's the Steve and Ms. Karen's I'm stressed the hell out, worn the hell out challenge. And if it's met, it'll take us down to let's see. 335, which will mean $35 from being fully funded for yesterday. So thank you, Steve. Hopefully there's somebody somebody out there that wants to jump in on that in short order.
I hope so. It's just my way of saying thanks for doing all that heavy lifting last night. I would have called, but I just wasn't up to it, man.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe we got went for the three-hour filibobsters. Maybe we need to close the program with 16 miles on the Erie Canal. Or 16 tons or
tons,
something.
But it was at Tennessee Ernie Ford. Yeah, yeah, I remember that one. Good song. You were talking about the group Blackfoot with somebody last week.
I think that was Kurt.
Yeah. You know, I have seen them more than any other group on the planet. I don't know why. It's just up in the D.C. area. When I was 16, 17, 18, 19, it seemed like they were there once a month.
Well, they'd open for anybody.
Right. I seen them open for Crocus. I seen them open just numerous bands. Aerosmith.
Barry Como. The Happy Goodman family.
But they were good, man.
They were awesome. They were studio musicians.
Yep. Yeah, Ricky Medlock and me and Roy were talking about this the other night. He was actually with Lynyrd Skynyrd on First and Last. You want to trace that trail back.
Yep. You're right.
And Ricky Medlock's grandfather wrote the song Train Train. And the most interesting show I've seen him was at Timonium Fairgrounds, General Admission. I was doing my best Bugs Bunny. Pardon me. And I wormed my way all the
way to
the
Excuse me. Excuse me. Lady with a baby. Hot pizza. Let a rabbit trow.
I wormed my way all the way to the front row, man. And so, that was the most interesting show. Couldn't leave, but you ever been to a General Admission show?
Oh yeah,
that's bad. I wouldn't do it now, I'm too old, but back in the day they were a hoot.
I don't think I could do that now.
No, I couldn't. I don't have it in me. One of my favorite Blackfoot songs is off their Strikes album, and it's called Left Turn Red Light. I don't know if you've ever heard it or not. But
no, I've heard that whole album multiple times.
Man. It's about stumbling around through life, basically. Left Turn Red Light. Great song. Powerful song. And, yeah, if anybody wants something cathartic to listen to, I highly suggest it. Doing the YouTube search. And music is very therapeutic in times like these.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And it's like, well, Agnes and me, I need that couple of hours before sleep where we just kind of sit there and find something to watch and,
something
let it all go.
Related. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of Sopranos reruns.
Oh, that's uplifting.
Yeah. Well, there's magic behind my madness because there's a show called Talking Soprano where Chris and Bobby Bacala, I don't know their real names, that's their character names, they're breaking down every show. And your friend Mr. Fisher would probably like it because they really do a deep dive as far as they get into the sets and the producers and it's very detail oriented and it's interesting.
Cool.
Yep.
Oh, by the way, I had a note from Sparky. The subject line reads, they have a senator. Of course they do. Alabama's Tommy Tuberville. Actually, that would be Auburn's Tommy Tuberville. The Alabama fans are pissed now. Auburn's Tommy Tuberville is going to protest the electors on January 6th.
Even with the wrath of Mitch coming down on his head, huh?
He don't care. Mitch can piss and moan all he wants to. He's doing the bidding of the fine people of Alabama.
It's not going to go anywhere, Bob.
I know, but I said this the other day. He is dumber. He is dumber than a bag of hammer handles. But he will be the senator from the state of Alabama for as long as he remains alive and wants to be the senator from the state of Alabama. That's how fucked up that state's politics are.
It's a sporting event to them. Blue team against the red team, and they're dug
right,
in.
And all he has to do is find his way to the microphone and put that really stupid, antiquated microphone on that they wear on their lapels or whatever. You know, they only got, like, two. And just has to stand up there and marble, gurgle, blabber, MAGA. And back home, in the faithful back home in Alabama, he's a great statesman. Bargle, bargle, warble, woof, marga. I mean, this is a guy who got stone cold busted running a scam hedge fund, and he's sitting in the fucking Senate now.
Ah, well, look at Lef Loeffler and Perdue.
Yo.
Loeffler, she's just so mechanical.
Oh, Kelly Loeffler.
Social radical, yeah, social radical agenda. Social radical agenda. Somebody put together an homage from their debate, and it was like 5 minutes long, or her just saying the same thing. She's got to be the worst candidate ever.
She is the most automatonic candidate right. since Willard Romney ran for president. We all thought the Romney bot was awful. Well, the Loeffler bot could give lessons.
Well, let's hope Georgia can pull this off. You know, I'm going to do everything that I can.
Well, I know you're working your ass off. Yeah. I did that just for Giraffe.
Give yourself a cowbell, bro. You earned it, man.
Well, thank you very kindly. I was just stealing from Giraffe on that one.
But let me encourage everyone to call in. Bob's as easy to talk to as breathing. There's nothing to be afraid of. I was petrified at first, but now it's just like talking to a friend.
Yeah.
Call in.
If you can't handle a conversation on this program, you probably ought not ever call any program.
And I'm not trying to canonize you, but you have a way of drawing people into a conversation, and it's easy. It's nothing to it. Give Bob a call, and you'll find yourself the wiser for it.
Call now, BR549.
6952. Because I got to bounce, brother. Cletus is clawing on my leg,
man. You tell little Cletus we love her.
All right, Bob. Well, you take good care. And it was nice talking to you,
It's always a joy talking to you. Give our best to little Cletus and to Miss Karen, please.
We'll do. Take care, friend.
All right, thank you. And so the $20 challenge is on the table, courtesy of Steve from Georgia. That's Brother Deacon Steve from Georgia Stan. And Miss Karen and little Cletus, if met, like I said, it gets us down to 335, and then we'll head for maybe, well, it'd be nice to fully fund yesterday's program. Well, here we go. Since Mark availed himself of the Katz's Deli challenge yesterday, and bear in mind, it may be a while getting there because stuff is backed up in a big way in New York. But for a new $15 subscription, one of these. It's the LES Sausage Series Combo Pack. The German Deli Schaller and Weber is where it comes from. Or a Taste of Hütte. And that's pate with goose, Landjäger sausage, Alpenzoller, alpine cheese, and Zatter dipping chocolates, or hot cocoa, or coffee. The LES sausage series is, oh, goodness me. they describe it as the culmination of our collaboration with Egg Shop, The Flower Shop, and Cafe Select, all located in Manhattan's Lower East Side. Or a curryverst combo. Recreate Schaller's Stube at home with our currywurst combo pack featuring our new Berlin-style currywurst ketchup, the best heat, the best sweet heat on this all-natural gluten-free ketchup will have you tapping the bottle dry. That's for a $15 subscription. Your choice of those three. For a new $20 subscription, well, by golly, the Bavarian box. Weisswurst pack, German delicatessen sauerkraut, Bavarian sweet and spicy mustard, and imported German pretzels. Or the Oktoberfest pack. Cooked Bratwurst, Knackwurst, Nuremberger Bratwurst, Weisswurst, Dusseldorf-style horseradish mustard, sweet and spicy Bavarian-style mustard, sauerkraut, Or the bacon cheddar brat pack. So the way it works, if we can get a new $20 subscriber and a new $15 subscriber, at $20, tell me which one you want and give me an address. And at $15, tell me which one you want and give me an address. And I will remind periodically, and frankly, if you subscribe, if a new $20 subscriber jumps in, you'll also meet Steve and Miss Karen and little Cletus's stressed out and exhausted challenge. Randy Radar asks, whatever happened to Binkert's in Baltimore? Well, Binkert's is still there and it is still my favorite German sausage maker by a mile. But they don't do the retail side anymore. That's my understanding. They just serve, they make and supply restaurants. Every now and then I get a little care package like on my birthday and stuff, and I live for that. But that's pretty much the story there. And if you're listening, hi, Reverbo. And hi to the lovely Sonia. Mm-hmm. Oh, now you got me thinking. Oh, dear God. You just had to do that to me, didn't you, Randy? Oy. Yeah, Lower East Side items included the Egg Shop and Schaller and Weber Pork Breakfast Sausage, Cafe Select and Schaller and Weber St. Gallerwurst, and the Flower Shop and Schaller and Weber Aussie Style Snag. Yummy. Oh, yummy. So we are at the halfway point of the program, and if you'd like to engage in some conversation, you are mightily welcome so to do. Hey, thank you, Will in Chicago. Will just met Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus' challenge, and that actually takes us down to 330 bucks. That's awesome. Thank you, Will. Thank you so very much, and that'll... That means we got 30 bucks to finish with yesterday, and then maybe we'll get started on tonight. Thank you. So, like I said, we're at the halfway point of the program, and if you'd like to engage in conversation, you're more than welcome so to do. And it is Thursday, and that means we've got the Green News Report. But before that, just a reminder of just how evil. And Steve and I had a conversation the other night about cavalierly tossing around the word evil, but I think this is one of those places where you can use it. The ICE thugs will begin deporting 26 black and brown families with young children who are presently incarcerated by ICE at the Burks and Dilley family prisons tomorrow, the 18th day of December. Earlier this week, a federal court in Washington, D.C. lifted the stay of removal that had been protecting these families from being deported. National advocacy groups and members of Congress are calling on U.S. Citizen and Immigration Services to review the families' asylum claims, which were wrongly denied under MAGAT administration policies since overturned by federal courts. And they're also calling on the Department of Homeland Security to halt the deportations. Because we are at that point in the script, I guess, where you just do shitty things on the way out the door purely out of spite. One father from the Berks Detention Center said, "We fled Haiti due to government violence against us. We were university students speaking out against human rights abuse, injustice. We were attacked, beaten, and barely escaped. We came to the U.S. thinking this is where we will find refuge, only to be thrown in prison for more than 8 months. We're human beings, too. Our children are human beings, too, and should not have to suffer like this. And no, they damned well shouldn't." The maggots, led by the maggot in chief, the Marquis de Sade of the modern presidency, denied the asylum claim. And the policies they used to deny the asylum requests were ruled unlawful by federal courts. And the ruling to deport the families was made under those previous unlawful policies. And so ICE, instead of manifesting any respect for the rule of law, are moving as quickly as they possibly can to deport these fragile, threatened families as quickly as they possibly can. Make no mistake, though, Citizenship and Immigration Services does have the authority to apply the law correctly and allow the asylum claims to be heard in the immigration courts. It's a shame. It is a shameful blot on the history of this nation, and it will be, if it is not stopped, a revolting example of just how vicious this sickening administration has been. Lisette Alvarez is a member of the Berks County community and is a member of Make the Road PA. She said, "I want to live in a world where there are no family jails. These families are being denied the right to have asylum and to stay in this country with their relatives or sponsors, and they're likely to face death upon return to their home countries. ICE must stop their deportations now." Make no mistake, the children of these families will face potential death or torture if they are returned to the countries they fled. They come from places like Haiti, Guatemala, Nicaragua, Peru, Honduras, El Salvador, and Ecuador. And they've been kept in brutal concentration camp conditions throughout the entirety of the COVID-19 pandemic, and they damned well deserve the basic human right of trying to protect themselves. There's one 11-year-old boy at the Dilley Family Prison, the concentration camp in Texas. Juan David says, "I am detained with my mom. The 27th of November, we completed 15 months of detention. They asked me why I'm afraid to return to my country. I'm afraid that the gangsters will hurt me, that they will kill me and my mom. I want to have a normal life, make friends, go to a normal school, be with my family, live a normal life. Here in this prison, I always have a headache and anxiety." Of course, I guess they won't be reporting this on Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, or on, Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground. But you'd like to take something like this and hold it up to one of those especially pious maggots and say, "This is what you voted for, not once but twice. You voted once in ignorance. You voted twice knowing full well who the fuck these people are. The hell is wrong with you? Go forth and never claim to be a decent human being ever, ever again." It reminds me of those 30 people, normal people, regular people, that the young pimply-faced Josh Hawley of Missouri was babbling about yesterday, who are just sure they done got disenfranchised because they voted for the person who lost the election. He, those privileged, shit-eating little... Let's see. I voted for Walter Mondale in 1984, the first presidential election I could vote in. I voted for Michael Dukakis in 1988. I lost both of those things, and it pissed me off. But I didn't claim that anybody had stolen my vote just because I lost or my candidate lost. I got to feel the warm, self-satisfied glow of victory twice in the 90s with Clinton. And holy Jesus, the election of 2000. Yeah, then I did say the election was stolen. You know why? Because it was. And 2004. I've voted for the loser in more presidential elections than I've voted for the winner. Now, that doesn't count 2016 when I voted for the winner, but she didn't get to be president. And actions have consequences. And if you voted for Donald Trump knowing full well exactly who he was, and remember, more people voted for him this time than last, that is an indictment, a judgment upon the people who did that. And for Jen O'Malley Dillon to refer to Republicans in Congress as fuckers, that's mild. The people who voted for Donald Trump are, beyond a shadow of a doubt, vicious, hateful, amoral, maybe even psychopathic. But I know the one damn thing they're not, no matter how loudly they bray that they are. Christians. Christians. Yeah. Let's see, I got some thank yous to send out before we go to the phones. Thank you very kindly to Brian. Brian got us down to 305. Thank you, Brian. And Barbara. Well, Barbara got us down to $270. Thank you, Brian, and thank you, Barbara. Thank you both so very kindly. $270 to finish fundraising for the evening, which should make things fairly less stressful if we can go into Friday on the front porch without a big old hole to fill in. Thank you, Barbara, and thank you, Brian. Let's see here. Randy Radar says, according to my calculations, there are 33 3/4 days till Trump's administration is over. I'm putting up a 50. In Bush v. Gore 2000 election, Republicans told us liberals to get over it. Get over it. Turnabout is fair play. Oh, yeah, Randy, they also called us sore loser man. They referred to Gore Lieberman as sore loser man. When what people were angry about was a stolen election. And maybe that's why they've been so damn quiet, George and Laura, during all the barking and grunting and hooting. From the maggots in this campaign. Hey, let's go over and check in with Will in Chicago. Hey, Will.
Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you loud and clear.
Excellent, because I would like to share a quote on the immigration issue from someone who has good standing to comment on it, not just because he is a member of the United States Senate, but also, it'll become apparent. I took this from the Ford. Jewish senator says Trump's immigration policy recreated paper wall that kept Jews out of U.S. in 1930s. Senator Ron Wyden, a son of Jewish parents who escaped Nazi Germany for the United States, compared President Donald Trump's immigration policy to that of the restrictive U.S. policy in the 1930s. During that era, many Jewish immigrants trying to flee Germany were blocked from coming to America. See the sad story of the ship known as the St. Louis.
Exactly.
The president has rebuilt the infamous paper wall like that of the 1930s that kept too many Jews out of the United States, trapping them with the murderous regime of Nazi Germany. Wyden, a 71-year-old Oregon Democrat, said Tuesday in a speech on the Senate floor. In 2020, caring people look back and recognize that paper wall and a failure to save more people from execution at the hands of the Nazis. It was a staggering humanitarian disaster.
Well, remember, Will, when the attack took place on the Tree of Life synagogue.
Yes.
That Trump supporter attacked and murdered people at Tree of Life because he was angry about Jewish support for a social service agency that had actually begun in the early parts of the, I think, 20th century. And their goal was to aid newly arrived Jewish immigrants and help them settle into American life.
Right. And but, since that time, it's gone on to help immigrants in general.
Right. They repurposed themselves to help immigrants from other countries. You know, actually kind of not just talking the talk, but walking the walk, you know, where it says, remember, we were strangers in Egypt once.
Yeah, too. And that and the command to love the stranger is repeated several times in the Torah and throughout the Tanakh, the Jewish Bible, simply because we have people who forget that basic requirement.
Well, the Semitic.
My hope is that we can somehow have people step up and make sure people are not sent back to death and torture, as happened too many times in our past. I mean, we are going to, if I live to be as old as my great aunt who passed last year, Aunt Gussie, who was 103.
May her memory be for a blessing.
Indeed. I mean, yeah, they got out of what was then the Russian Empire just in time. And my grandfather actually was fortunate as he hid as a four-year-old because he had playfully thrown a lump of coal at a Cossack's horse. So if he hadn't hid, well, we know the warmth and humanity of the servants of the great Russian Empire. I meant to say vampire. Concerning Kelly Loeffler, I will share a comment I made in chat.
Okay.
The Borg Queen was far more lifelike than Miss Loeffler.
Okay. Well played.
Well, yes, but I mean, here's the thing. We're going to have to do a lot of cleanup. And of course, Trump, being who he is, will, and you'll get the historical reference, poison the wells on the way out as much as he can.
Yep.
Because in the end, it is not about country. It is not even about ideology in his case. It's all about him. And I forget who said it recently, the GOP, the Republican Party, has become an institution whose purpose is to further the power of its members and the power of its donor base. And this is what we have. We have democracy being questioned. We had people of prominent position saying, let us throw out millions of votes. And by the way, Bob, the New York Times in, I believe, November 2001 actually went through the Florida recount in various methods if they had actually been done. And would you believe Al Gore would have won?
Yes.
Yes, but I mean, here's the thing. This was nowhere close, either by the ridiculous standards of the Electoral College, where Wyoming has more power per voter than California or Texas, or by the popular vote, which is the way most countries that strive towards democracy and or representative government try to go. Instead, we quite literally had people saying votes should not count unless they are our votes. And this is what I worry about, that Trump has left a legacy of fanaticism where a slightly more capable individual like Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton will be able to take advantage of it. The GOP is used to winning by minority votes, by gerrymandering, and by suppressing the vote. So we have to be out there. And yes, I have been donating to John Ossoff and Reverend Warner, and I'm hoping that they will both win, but there's long-term concerns. One is something that, and yes, I am going into my pitchman role, people that we need to do. We need to support progressive media. Bob, I'm checking in the next few months for jobs in various parts of the country. As you can only imagine how things are going at my district, which is...
Oh, I've thought of you often, and I can't imagine what it must be like to be a teacher just about anywhere right now.
Well, my district, and I, for my purposes, I will not reveal the name, except that it is in Northwest Indiana. It's poor, lots of Hispanic and African-American students. And my biggest attended class today was at 50%. I have several times more students failing than last year. In fact, in some classes, I would not even say not even 50% are passing, and some not even 25%, because the students aren't showing up, they're not doing their work, and part of it is some have technology issues because this pandemic is hitting the poor of Appalachia and the U.S. in general. Hispanics, whether they're in Los Angeles or New York or greater Chicago or Chicagoland, Northwest Indiana, and African Americans everywhere from the shores of Lake Michigan to Florida to the West Coast. Those communities are being impacted heavily in terms of education and, sadly, the pandemic. I mean, in theory, late January, we may have a return to hybrid learning. Well, many kids won't be showing up because their parents are scared. The kids are scared. And honestly, with the numbers we have and what I see, such as, we are doing something nice. We're giving our kids some bags for Christmas, candies, other things. And on the way to my school, at the busiest intersection in the community where I work, saw two people, neither had masks. One rode his bike within 3 feet of each of the other. And even in stores, people aren't wearing masks properly, even in some of the better communities in my areas in terms of income and education. So we have to be prepared. We got work. We need to get to the ground game, which is, one, we need to get our people in allies in elective office, and that begins at the ground level. I'm talking to you, aldermen, county board members, school board member, and the like. We also need a progressive infrastructure because except for stations like WCPT and a few others, there's very little over the terrestrial airways. In fact, in Phoenix, where I once lived, the progressive talk station is not listed anymore. There is one program from someone I worked with back in those days doing some board op work, so I have a lot of sympathy for your problems. But if let's say I got a job in Los Angeles and drove to from Chicago, I could literally, until I got to Los Angeles, get no progressive talk. And for LA, that's the Pacifica station, public radio. So Even though we looks like we caught up, I'm going to urge people, if they feel moved, to donate to the Horn as well as other good causes. We have to think of this as a long game for everything, from media to politics to education, because we are now seeing the GOP in desperation mode. They will be able to district as they wish in many states. But the demographics are changing. This may be their last stand because America is no longer the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant nation that many Republicans harken back to. Instead, we're much more diverse. And so what happens to people when they get desperate? They are willing to try measures that they would not consider. Bob, in 2000, would you have believed that we would see what we've seen this past month and a half, saying we must throw out millions of votes?
It's strange for me, Will, because on the one hand, it's kind of unimaginable. But on the other, if you spend a little time pondering it, it's kind of the natural outgrowth of what happened in 2000, isn't it?
Yes, it's a logical progression saying, well, votes don't need to count in a county. Votes don't need to count in entire states. And how soon will it be? And we already have allies of the president, including General Flynn. And I hope the new Justice Department realizes that a pardon for crimes that were not yet charged can still be, doesn't count in terms of levying, say, charges against OBN registered foreign lobbyists for Turkey or other countries. Flynn, as well as Salt and Pepper, have called for coups, military forces, temporary martial law, and their evidence has been laughed out of every court, even by Trump-appointed judges. This is where we're at. We're going to have to decide, will we have a united country? If so, what sort of country? And so we have to work on the long term, and that includes the Horn, that includes progressive media, and this includes those who are so moved to run for elective office at the local level, because one thing the GOP did after Goldwater's defeat was, we're going to have a long-term game plan.
And that's and what happened to Goldwater is never going to happen again.
Exactly.
They had their own, with all respect, they had their own never-again moment.
I understand that politically. I'm not offended, but here's the thing. We need to think long-term. We need to ask questions. Yes, we need to perhaps reform the way parties operate, but guess what? I will take any Democrat in Congress or the Senate over Republican, because the vote for leadership is important. And my hope is that
critical.
It is, because it determines who sits where, determines the rules, and if we don't step up and have a long-term game plan, the maggots will be back in some form. I'm afraid Trump is trying for a cult of personality, and unfortunately, he has bamboozled 40% or more of the country.
74 million.
74 million. And many of them will never admit they were wrong. Short of the year is 2025. In a move that recalled what happened in East Germany, Vladimir Putin's regime has been toppled, and records of the new Free Russian Republic have revealed that there was so much compromise on Trump, Lindsey Graham, and a few others, they might as well have had bugging devices sewn into their backsides.
I would not be surprised if we found that out at some point, Will. And there's real, I mean, and I'm not making this up, there was a story today that Russia has been banned from its athletes using its flag, the name of its country, the country, or its national anthem for the next two Olympiads because
yes,
of the
that on the new,
yeah, because of just how dirty they are relative to the doping scandal. Now, on the one hand, it might be easy to say, so what? It's the Olympics. That will trigger worldwide cyber attacks on the countries that voted in favor of that inside the Committee on Sport.
And we need to be ready because I think we're in for a long war. We have, on the one side, those who support totalitarianism inside and outside of our country, and those who support various forms of democracy. And it may be more of a shadow war than an actual hot war, because heaven knows where that would lead. But we have to realize we're in for a long haul, a long struggle, and the only way we get there is together. So donating to the horn, working with those candidates and organizations you have faith in, being supportive in your community, whether it's just, hey, I have some extra canned goods, I'll donate to them to the local food pantry, or raising your voice. I mean, during the elections, I actually, after a few failed attempts, ended up being able to call Georgia, Florida, and Pennsylvania. So we have to be in this for the long haul, and we need to do it together. And sadly, some of our best messengers, such as you, Nicole Sandler, Mike Malloy, Stephanie Miller, and I hope Chris Lavoie, who's on his staff.
Don't leave out our buddy. Don't leave out our buddy Rick Smith.
Rick Smith as well. Well, Chris Lavoie, I was mentioning particularly because he received a positive COVID test today.
Oh, damn it!
Yes, they were going to retest after the show, so I'm hoping, for his sake and the sake of everyone on the show, that it's a false positive, because Stephanie's plans were to see her mother, her very old mother, is pretty much, well, Alzheimer's, and is waiting to see her daughter before the end, which is what other siblings are. So we have people all struggling. I mean, quite literally, if I was in a position to give each progressive host I named and several others what Rush Limbaugh gets in 1 year, I think that would be one of the few times you would have Mike Malloy completely silent out of sheer shock, because he went.
Yeah, and someone like you, Will, who I've known for so long through this program, you would do it and you would never count the cost.
No, because I view the horn and like-minded programs as an investment. I mean, I view education as an investment. That's, and so, for example, do those in the countries that Trump wanted more people to come from, the Scandinavian countries. Well, guess what? If I gave your little granddaughter the fine gift that every kid in Denmark gets, hey, Bob, your daughter just won a, your granddaughter just has a wonderful gift. Her education is funded fully from preschool to PhD.
Done.
That would be a gift your family would celebrate.
Oh, and I'm telling tales out of school real quick, but Agnes and I were on FaceTime with our granddaughter last night. And she's, I mean, it's kind of mind-blowing. She'll be a ninth grader next year.
Dear Lord.
And she has, I can only say, she has a formidable vocabulary. I mean, I don't think I had a vocabulary like that at 13. It's amazing. And it's largely, and it's not because of the local underfunded school system. It's in spite of. And that's and that's not about the teachers, although 70% of teachers in West Virginia voted for Trump and their union members, go figure. It's an indictment of how we underfund schools and then wonder why they underperform.
Yes, it's kind of like, okay, you take Michael Jordan in his prime. Instead of having an athletic gear, we're going to have him play basketball in a suit of plate armor from the year 1500.
Exactly. And suddenly it's not quite, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I should let you go as I need to grab dinner. So happy holidays. Tonight's the last night of Hanukkah, so we're doing virtual candle lighting.
I was going to mention that and hope that you had a lovely final night of Hanukkah. And you did, apparently you served as some inspiration. Samson just jumped in and took us down to only $180 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. So thank you to Samson, and thank you for your kind words, Will.
Thank you, Samson, and everyone. Happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Kwanzaa, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year. Let's hope for a much better 2021.
And happy New Year's Day, January 20th, 2021.
That's the real New Year as far as I'm concerned.
Hear, hear. Be well, Will. Thank you again. It is always so good to hear from you, and please stay safe.
Will do.
All right. Take care. That's our buddy Will from Chicago. Or the greater Chicagoland area, as they say. By the way, someone was on the stress line, but the stress line's open, the Skype line is open, and to finish off the evening, almost. Did I say 180? I meant 80. I think I meant 80. Because we have an anonymous challenge on the table as of now. It is the Bye-Bye Trump Challenge. $50. And if that 50 is met, then your 50 will be doubled. And we'll be done with fundraising. And all we'll have, it won't be some giant terrifying miracle tomorrow at Friday for Friday on the front porch. So the Bye-Bye Trump Challenge is on the table, anonymously offered, $50, and thank you very, very kindly for that challenge, and thank you to whomever decides to jump in and meet it. Thank you so very much indeed. Will, I don't know if you can still hear. Somebody tell Will if he's still in the chat room. Lou said, I really enjoyed the caller. Will's special. He always brings his A game. And let's go over to the stress line and see what's going on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, you said the stress line was available, so I thought I'd call in, Bob. It's media. How are you?
I'm doing pretty much okay. People not wearing masks here in my little community in West Virginia, notwithstanding. How are you?
Well, I know all about that, as you know, since I live here, too. I would like to shift gears a little bit,
sure.
If that's okay.
Sure.
I only work part-time these days, so I have some time to watch what's going on in Congress. I'm not as conversant as I like to be, but I wanted to bring to the attention of the listeners, if they haven't seen this, they can pull it up on YouTube. Today was a congressional hearing about the role of Purdue Pharma in the opioid crisis.
I've actually got that on my list, and I'm glad you brought it up.
It was mind blowing. We know that, and I don't often use the term evil, but these people truly are. They are a corporate sociopath, and this was a display of it that was so naked, so raw. Even the Republicans were almost rendered speechless at times. They had on David Sackler, who is a younger version of the Sacklers, and this Dr. Kathy Sackler, an older woman who, if I didn't know better, I'd say she was on drugs during this testimony. It was either some kind of act or she has some very serious cognitive problems. I don't know. But I want to throw out to your listeners, particularly those who know something about bankruptcy law, there's some things here I just don't understand. So, you know, they have pleaded guilty to three felonies. Of course, none of them have served any jail time, nor will they ever. But here's what I don't understand. They and Katie, what is her name from California? She's so good.
Porter.
She brought this up. And yes, she was toward the end of this thing. You'll hear her question this. But they pulled all this money, like $10 billion out of the company before they filed bankruptcy. And yes, to enrich themselves, you know? And I'm going, how can they possibly do that? And then they file for bankruptcy. And at the same time, the bankruptcy judge approves their current CEO getting a $3 million bonus. Now, this is after, you know, all of the lawsuits all across the country by states, cities, Indian tribes, and so forth, all these suits out there pending, all the people that have been harmed, including, of course, babies born with neonatal abstinence syndrome. It's just, and I know we're all focused, of course, on this pandemic, but let me just raise that the pandemic has actually even worsened the drug overdoses because people are so isolated and having difficulty getting the treatment programs and all of that. It just compounds everything. And so when we look at the number of deaths from this whole disaster, which man-made, oh, we're talking about 500,000 dead people. And meanwhile, these Sacklers are getting off the hook completely. Now, a couple things I want to throw out. Maybe people can call in who have better understanding of this than me. Number one, how can they pull all that money out, then file for bankruptcy? Number two, how is it possible that the bankruptcy court is going to allow their CEO to get this additional bonus? And he's not the only one. I believe there was a total of $38 million in bonuses across the company. And how is it that, and this is the part I really have no awareness of, they're going to be repurposed as a public trust? Which I don't even understand what does that mean? What does that mean?
My best guess, Nydia, is that it's something along the lines of what are called in other jurisdictions a beneficial corporation. Those are corporations that are organized in such a way that the corporate charter doesn't say that their primary purpose is making a fast buck like most corporate charters do, but that it has a component of doing good in the community.
Well, that's a joke. Of course, you know, they keep hiding behind, you know, this is an effective painkiller and so forth. Well, you know, the medical literature on this at this point, there is no debating it. People do not need that type of opiate unless we're looking at truly life-threatening situations, not because somebody has tooth pulled, not because they have a backache, not because they're getting over birth of a child. And you know that I work in the addiction treatment field, and the majority of people I see, and this is what national statistics show as well, that usually it starts out with a prescription drug and then the rest of the story you know. But nothing can really justify what this company has done. They are corporate thieves, but I just wanted to call in, and you know I don't call in often, but
not nearly enough.
Want to? Well, I'm reluctant to because it's too easy for me to go down the rabbit hole. But if people want to see absolute sheer naked, in your face corporate greed that is completely unapologetic, arrogant, contrite. It is the most appalling thing I have seen in quite some time, where it's so much right in your face. I mean, we could, you and I certainly, you know this much better than I, could talk about the coal companies, the mountaintop removal and all that. But usually you don't see the nakedness of their evil like what I witnessed today. So I'm going to jump off here, but I'd really like other people to, you know, take a look at this. I guess my question at this point is, since it is in bankruptcy court, the courts are all involved, is there anything that can even be done about it?
Well, sadly,
so I'm going to jump off.
Okay. Well, just real quick before you go, sadly, nothing is going to come of it. I mean, let's just be clear about that, because the Sacklers appeared today knowing that they were already off the hook. And so there are going to be there are already agreements pending in bankruptcy court. And of course, the corporation pled guilty to corporate felonies, but nobody goes to jail for that. And that was expressly part of the agreement that led to the pleas. They made
just my naivete.
The Sacklers
I can't fathom it.
Okay, I understand that. But I'll delve into it here in a few minutes.
Okay, I just can't fathom it. These people are going to be completely off the hook.
You can't fathom it because you are a decent, moral human being.
I don't know. Has there been anything, I'm sure there has, in U.S. history that compares to this? Has there?
All the time.
Well, I guess that's true.
You mentioned mountaintop removal and the business about giving the CEO a raise during bankruptcy. That's that's as common as the cold. Probably a bad analogy during a pandemic, but what'll happen? I mean, we've seen it two dozen times. If we've seen it once in the coal companies, they go in. The bankruptcy judge allows the coal company to steal the pension monies because human beings are listed as liabilities, not human beings or creditors. They steal steal the pension monies, and then the bankruptcy court turns around and grants leave to the corporation to pay these horse gagging amounts of money to their executive class as what are called retention bonuses. They're so good. They ran our company into the ground so good, we don't want to let them go anywhere else. We got to give them umpty gajillion more dollars to make sure they stay right here at Amalgamated Mountain Destruction. The bankruptcy code in this country is a freaking nightmare. And nobody knows that better than Senator Elizabeth Warren, and she's been banging the drum on it for eons. And the sad thing is, back in 2004, Democrats and Republicans found a way to come together on what back then was referred to as bankruptcy reform, Nydia. And that was where an already pernicious system was made more so. And then where ordinary working families were concerned, up until that point, if you got, say, in trouble financially, say you had credit card debt, but you lost your job and you couldn't pay your credit cards off, you could go and pay bankruptcy and the credit card companies would have to pound sand. Well, thanks to the bipartisan effort known as the bankruptcy reform of 2004, suddenly credit card companies became secured creditors. When they didn't have any agreement with their customers that they had any sort of security. But now you can't just out of hand bankrupt your credit cards, even though the credit card companies knew full well that they were rolling the dice when they gave you the card. It's infuriating.
It is unbelievable. And of course, on top of all that, who are the people who are serving time in relation to all this? It's primarily the victims. So that just compounds it further. Anyway, I'm going to say the complete outrage, which is often the state I'm in when I listen to your program, because there's so much to be outraged about. But anyway, I appreciate the clarification. I don't know the first thing about bankruptcy law. I guess I need to delve in. So I'm going to jump off here, Bob. Thank you.
Nydia, thank you very much. Happy holidays, my friend. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
And Nydia is, of course, right. It is outrageous. I heard a clip from Kathy Sackler saying, I've tried. I thought Purdue was acting responsibly to reduce the incidence of abuse and overdose while still serving those in need of pain relief. I've tried to figure out, was there anything that I could have done differently, knowing what I knew then, not what I know now? There's nothing I can find that I would have done differently based on what I believed and understood then. And they tried to palm all the responsibility off on non-family board members from out of state, yada, 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 yada. But there is memo, and I covered this. We talked about this a few weeks ago, maybe a month or more. But there's documentary evidence that shows that the Sackler family themselves were intimately involved in the day-to-day. That they gave express orders. One middle manager said they made it clear to us that our only job was to say yes and go and do what they said to do. And as a result, they're going to pay a fine, the Sackler family are. They're going to pay a fine of $250 million. Now, for people like you and me, we hear that number. $250 million? They made $10 billion last year, the Sacklers did, through Purdue Pharma. $250 million is barely a rounding error for them. Now, then there was young David Sackler. I believe I conducted myself legally and ethically, and I believe the full record will demonstrate that I still feel absolutely terrible that a product created to help so many people, you know, led to death and addiction. But there were people who were outraged and incensed. Tennessee, of course, has burned under the opioid addiction, the crisis. There's a Democrat in the House from Tennessee, and his name's Jim Cooper, and he said, "Watching you testify makes my blood boil. I'm not aware of any family in America that is more evil than yours." And then my member of Congress, Carol, let's pray. Let's ask Jesus what to do. And Jesus always says, vote for whatever the Republicans want. That's how Carol is. But she was on the committee, and she actually questioned David Sackler. And she wanted to know, had he ever been to Appalachia? David Sackler said, yes, I visited with my wife for a vacation. Yeah, I'm guessing that vacation didn't include going down to, Kermit, West Virginia? Gilbert? Where one single independent pharmacy received enough hydrocodone tablets for every person in West Virginia to have a nice, hearty addiction? Yeah. And remember, they were fined $635 or so million dollars in 2007. And they still didn't learn from it, and they still kept hustling their poison. So, at one point in time, one of the Sacklers emailing about ongoing court problems and the federal settlement of 2008. And Sackler denied, I don't know anything about that. But then Representative Maloney of New York read an email exchange from 2007, from just a week after the settlement, and talking about what had been going on in court, David Sackler wrote, "We're rich? For how long? Until which suits get through to the family?" Cue up Jerry Jeff Walker and "Up Against the Wall, Redneck Mother." Really, No kidding. Thanks for bringing that up, Nydia. I'm glad. I made sure that we got to that. I'm glad you made sure that we got to that. And they'll never testify in a courtroom with any sort of legal jeopardy attaching to them. Kathy Sackler, David Sackler, none of those scum. They only showed up because they were threatened with a subpoena, so they appeared voluntarily. Yeah. 450,000 dead due to the opioid crisis. 450,000 dead, many of whom are attributable directly to Kathy Sackler and David Sackler and the rest of that sick family. At this point in time, and granted, it won't stay that way for long, but at this point in time, the opioid crisis killed more Americans than the pandemic has. What a horror of a day it will be when the pandemic surpasses the opioid crisis that took years to take that many lives, but months of negligence from the MAGAT administration will have proven just as and eventually more deadly. Yeah. Lines open. There was a little flurry of calls into the stress line, and then they disappeared. But I'm glad that Nydia got through. It was good to hear from Will. And thank you. Jeremy just jumped back in. And so there's only $45 to go on the Bye-Bye Donnie Challenge. Thank you. Jeremy noting, subject line, opioids. I knew two of the 450,000 they've killed. I knew a couple of them, too. One of them, in the aftermath of the Freedom disaster here in West Virginia, found himself rededicated to making this place better. But he couldn't stay away from that poison. And he eventually overdosed. There were a lot of funerals in West Virginia. And there still are. I'm sorry, Jeremy. And I'm sorrier that those godforsaken psychopathic monsters, the Sacklers, will never answer for what they did to innocent Americans. It infuriates me. Back to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
I need to. Good evening.
Hey, Kurt, how are you?
How are you doing there, Mr. Bob?
I'm good,
and
Kurt.
Would you like a little spot of tea?
Oh, yes, a spot. But wait, where you are, it'll be frozen, won't it?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I got to turn you down here. I still got you loud here on my Kindle. I listened to you on my Kindle here. Yeah, I know how the radio works here.
Did you hear Steve from Georgia Stan referencing your call?
I sure did. That wasn't really part of the reason I called, but it is sort of part of the reason I called.
You know what I mean? I understand.
Yes. I was just going to say that when he was talking about, I'm trying to sit down here, Bob. I've been on my feet here all day. I need to sit down here and rest. Blackfoot here. He was talking about that album there, Strax album. Yes, that is That is a good album with Highway Song and Train, Train. I mean, all these great songs. But my favorite album of theirs, though, Bob, I have most of their albums, but the only album that I don't have is their first one. And that was called No Reservations. And but my favorite album of theirs is the Flying High album. And that was their number two album. And there's a great track on that album that's called Try a Little Harder. I don't know if you've ever, if you've heard that album, the Flying High album, Bob?
I don't think I did.
Oh, okay. Well, you can find that song over on YouTube. And it's really a hard driving album. I mean, it's really, really good. It's sort of a, it almost sounds like swing rock and roll and Southern rock all rolled into one. You know, it's a little bit of, you know, you can hear like a little bit of rockabilly, but then you hear the Southern rock and then you hear this real hard driving rock. It's quite an album. And and I'm trying to think of what album is, they had another song that was kind of like a bluegrass song called Spending Cabbage. And I can't remember if that was on the Tom Catton album or I think it might be on the Tom Catton album, but I'm not for sure on that. But that's a great song too. But it's, yeah, no, I enjoyed seeing them when I saw them up in Winnipeg. And, you know, but I forgot to tell you though, Bob, when I was talking to you about this another time, and that was when Ricky Medlock introduced the band. They went and they were warming up and they were doing some jam sessions, Bob, and they started out with Wishing Well, and then they did On the Run from the Tom Catton album, and then they paused, and then Ricky Medlock stepped up to the mic, Bob, and he said, well, as you know, he said, well, we're Blackfoot, and we're from Jacksonville, Florida, you know. And then he said, he says, we're three Indians and a Jew. And everybody looked at each other like, what? And it was just crazy.
Wow.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, I thought I lost you there for a minute. There was such a pause there, and then I couldn't hear anything. So I thought maybe I got cut off.
No, I'm always here.
Oh, okay. Okay. But yeah, that's what he said. And everybody's kind of like looking at each other like, what the hell? But yeah, they were really good live. I was really, really pleased. And that was the only reason I went to the concert was to see them. I didn't care about Def Leppard and all that other stuff that was going on there. But it was a great concert. It was, like, my God, that's such a long time ago. But they put on a hell of a show, though, Bob.
Oh, I can
imagine. Did you ever see them, Bob?
I did see them once. I can't remember who they opened for, but... They were a hell of a band.
Oh, yes, they were.
Obviously,
yes,
Steve from Georgia Stan really enjoys them.
Oh, yes. No, I was kind of shocked when I was working on something here when he was on there with you, and I thought, well, by God, I better call in here and just put in my two cents. But another reason I called is. You were talking with the other lovely lady here. What was her name?
Nidia.
Can't remember.
Nidia?
Yeah, Nidia. Yes. I was going to tell you that I've been listening to an audiobook by Kurt Anderson. I listened to his book of, I think it was like, was it last year? I think it was. It was called Fantasyland.
Yes. And There's been considerable discussion of that book on this program.
Yes. And I listened to the audiobook. I love audiobooks, Bob, because you can be doing something while you're listening, you know. But I've been actually, I've been listening now to his newest book, and it's called Evil Geniuses. And it's about how the corporate takeover of the 1980s, how it bushwhacked the whole American people, and how they've been able to get away with all the shit that's been going on since 1980. And I think I'm up to the fifth chapter here now, but it's been a really good book, and he sure doesn't have very nice things to say about the 80s, Bob.
The Reagan 80s? What nice is there to say?
Right. Right. And he makes a comparison, which is sort of interesting. He makes the comparison of the 50s and the 80s were very much alike, insofar as that with the nationalism, God and family, and you know, all this propaganda about nationalism and all this stuff, and it's kind of true. Although I wasn't around in the 50s, but when you go back and you look at some of the, you know, of what was going on back in the 50s, yeah, you know, they were trying to paint, you know, kind of a perfect picture of family life and all this stuff.
Well,
and
a perfect picture of white family life.
Yes, exactly. Correct. You're absolutely correct. Yes. In the White House and the white picket fence. Yes. And yes. But it's been a good book so far that I've been listening to. And of course, you know, Kurt Anderson was a guy, you know, he restarted Spy magazine back in the early 90s, if you remember.
I didn't realize that. But I remember Spy, you know, in the early 90s.
Yes. And of course, that magazine was kind of it made fun of the rich, and it showed how decadent they were, and what they would spend their money on such frivolous shit, you know. And I really like his writing, and it's kind of interesting. So what did you think of Fantasyland? Did you read the book?
Yeah, I did. And Tom? I thought it brilliant, and I thought it a thoroughgoing explanation of why we're in this handbasket and where we're headed in it.
Right. Oh, yes. And it was kind of interesting, too, how he mentioned that we here in the United States, we have this propensity for fantasy. You know, he mentions like Disneyland and theme parks, and we love fantasy stuff. And we're kind of the only westernized country that sort of enjoys that kind of stuff, which is interesting. And then, of course, you know, he talks about, you know, like Daniel Boone and how he hyped that up, and all, you know, of all the historical figures and stuff like that.
Yeah, we like our history sugar-coated.
Yeah.
Like we like exactly. Our cereal.
Right. Right. With a little dab of ketchup on top. No, I'm just kidding, Bob. No.
I don't take that as a joke, Kurt.
Oh, come on, Bob. Be a sport. Well, I like ketchup, Bob. That's my food porn. I love ketchup, Bob. I've been a ketchup fan, Bob, ever since I was a little kid. But now that I've gotten older, and of course the way now the food is so processed, I stay away from all the, you know, the corn syrup and all that other shit that's in there. But I'll tell you what, if you want to try, for those of you out there in the Horn family or if you want to try some great organic ketchup,
yeah.
Oh my God, Annie's ketchup.
Oh, Annie's makes it so many like good things.
Annie's ketchup, Bob, tastes like ketchup that I remember when I was a kid, because it has that, you know, that little sweet more vinegar zest to it. You know.
Well, since we're talking about yummy organic things, you're a sauerkraut fan, right?
Or
are you agnostic?
No, I'm sorry, Bob. Yeah, I'm not much of a sauerkraut.
I love my kraut, and I love my kimchi.
Okay.
And up in Maine, this is an unpaid product placement. Up in Maine, there's an outfit called 30 Acre Farm. And their website is 30acrefarm.com. Oh, wow. They make beautiful raw and fermented hot sauces. And in a way, it reminds me of what Roger did, Roger in Oregon. But they also make kraut and kimchi. And I received a jar of their mild kimchi. And it's fantastic. I mean, it's alive and bubbling when you open it. And,
oh, is that right?
Oh, yeah. I know Steve from Georgistan's a big sauerkraut fan, and he likes the live probiotic stuff. The mild is good. I'm trying to get my hands on some of the hot. I mean, they've got things like jalapeno kraut. They've got curry. Now, this just kind of, this can't help but intrigue me. Curried collikraut. It's kraut that includes cauliflower with a zesty curry infusion. And it's fermented with curry.
Okay. Wow.
And I mean, they do delicious stuff. 30 Acre Farm.
Is it really, really hot?
I haven't tried it yet, but I hope it is.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I got the mild kimchi.
I see. Sure. Right. It's better to be safe than sorry.
But this stuff's magic. I mean, the mild kimchi has these big, these nice round thin slices of like daikon radish and Napa cabbage green cabbage, and it is fan freaking tastic on a hot dog, Kurt.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, and now I got to try their hot sauces.
Well, cabbage. Now, isn't that big down in the South? Isn't it, Bob?
Oh sure.
Yeah.
But it's big in New York City too, because the classic New York City dirty water dog.
I'm sure.
The classic New York City dirty water dog is mustard and kraut. Mustard and kraut.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know if I can handle that, but I probably could. But you know, maybe the spiciness might help too with the taste. You know, when you get a little kick into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yes. I have to pretty much watch what I eat, so I don't eat a lot of processed foods and stuff, because if I gain weight, I wouldn't be able to walk.
Yeah.
And you're not exaggerating there.
Since we were complaining about me filibobstering last night, I got somebody trying to get in on this line, so I want to try to get as many calls in this evening as I can. You take care of yourself, my friend. Sure. I'm glad you called in. I always enjoy our conversation.
You too, Bob, and... Yes, you betcha. No, I'll let you go, Bob.
All right.
And you take care of yourself. And if I don't talk to you, Merry Christmas to you and Agnes.
Oh, thank you, Kurt. To you as well. And just stay warm and stay safe. And I hope we'll be talking before Christmas. Christmas is a week from tomorrow, so
yeah.
we got almost a whole broadcast week.
Right. Yeah, no, I don't plan to go anywhere here now this year, Bob. I'm just staying right here. I'm not going anyplace. Not with all the crazies.
No, no. You are a wise man for making that decision. You take care of yourself, Kurt. We'll talk soon. All right. Bye now.
You too, my friend. Bye-bye.
And no sooner do I do that than whoever was ringing in stops ringing in. So if you want to try again, you're more than welcome so to do. I couldn't resist bringing up the organic natural kimchi because, wow, it's good. And it comes from Maine. So maybe give it a try. They got like four different kinds of hot sauce: Red Riot, Jalapeno Business, Earth Fire, and Melon Head. Well, that Melon Head just sounds real interesting. I bet you Roger could probably make any one of those and not even break a sweat, except for the hot pepper part. So, what else this evening? Well, big thanks. Big thanks to our buddy Mark, who met the Bye Bye Donnie challenge. Thank you so much. We are done with fundraising all the way up to this evening. I am so thrilled. That means tomorrow all we got to do is $300 and we're done. And we've fully funded the week. We go day by day and week by week. Thank you, Mark. Thank you so very much. It is appreciated more than you know. It's always a challenge to figure out just which stories to bring and which stories don't make the cut. And just as Jeremy in Vermont said, the two people that he knew that were killed by the Sacklers, he wrote in a few minutes later and said, one of them was my sister and the other was my brother-in-law. These corporate evils, and there's that word again, and I have no problem using it in this regard. These corporate evils so often in this country go unpunished. But they aren't the only ones that go unpunished. So far, to the best of my knowledge, there has been no arrest down in Pritchard, Alabama, which is a little community not too far from Mobile. And WALA-TV reported, and there hasn't been much follow-up on it. I tried before the program. Family believes 19-year-old murdered at Pritchard Christmas party was victim of hate crime. And it is the story of the murder of Jaheim Pugh, 19 years old. And in the broad scope of Mobile, Alabama, it's another murder. I saw another story when I was trying to update this one about people shooting and murdering others. And it was two families shooting at each other. And one of them managed to, it's kind of a modern day Hatfields and McCoys, because somebody from one family killed another, and they retaliated by killing a member of the killer's family. Gee, it sounds a lot like the Middle East, doesn't it? But Tiffany Pugh, after her 19-year-old child was murdered, refused to be silent. And she said, my son was killed because of what he was wearing, not because of who he was or what he did. He had just begun to transition. And he was gunned down because Jaheim Pugh was non-binary, is the term now. and the night he was murdered. Jaheim Pugh was murdered for wearing a rainbow-colored jumpsuit. And after Jaheim was shot, bystanders just stood around shooting video of Jaheim's body. Their mother said they took somebody special just because he wore a dress. And this is, you know, this is the toxic America in which we live. And God knows we don't have any kind of lock on toxicity toward the LGBTQ plus community. But over the last 4 years, where progress had begun to be made, we have engaged in retrograde motion. You know, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the court ruling in England that's going to drive the suicide rate up among young trans kids, because they're now not going to be allowed to take the medical steps necessary to be who they are. It's a sign of the sickness in this country. And Jaheim Pugh was a 19-year-old African-American person, and quite possibly murdered by a member of the African-American community, because the toxicity knows no racial boundaries. LGBTQ people, and particularly trans people, are despised by far too many people in this country. Black, white, Latino, it matters not. But I guess the bottom line in this story is that Mama had to speak up and demand that law enforcement at least investigate whether this event was in fact a hate crime. The other problem, of course, is it's Talibama, and who knows if they even have a hate crime law on the books in that benighted state. Jaheim's mama said, "I loved him with everything in me. That's why he could shine like he did. Everything I had, I poured into Jaheim." She put up a video, Mama did, filled with indignation, grief, and fury. And she said, "You sat there for 20 minutes and recorded him on the floor. No CPR, nothing." Statements they put on the live was, "If he wasn't wearing that dress, he'd still be alive." Jaheim had said, "I just want to be me. I just want to be me, Mama. I just want to be me." She said, "That's what he said, and I support him." Two other people were injured. Pritchard police say they're looking for somebody named James Lee James Jr. as a person of interest. And that's it. Jaheim had, pronouns are troublesome in situations like this. Jaheim had apparently just chosen a name for themselves. Bella. So, this story probably won't get a lot of play in the country. Not when we have stories of Republicans being shitty and a pandemic burning up the nation. But I just thought I'd take a moment and say her name, Bella, because it deserves to be said. Because it should never have happened. Jeremy says, "Stupid people. Ignorance begets fear, begets violence. Fuck these assholes who can't just let people live, laugh, and love the way they want. I get violently angry at any of these stories, and I know exactly what you're talking about. Makes me crazy. Makes me crazy. So, you know, I don't reckon her mama will ever know. But if you care, if things like this hurt you to your core, say her name. Bella. Bella. And yeah, there are so many other stories. You may have heard the story. I don't know if we remarked on it here or not. But that apparently some of the vaccine vials of the Pfizer vaccine were overfilled. I don't quite know how that happens. But it does, I guess. And the CDC said, for God's sakes, that means there's extra vaccine. Vaccinate more people. Use the whole vial, please. Enter the Maggot Veterans Administration. Citing something they refer to as inventory monitoring. Only one day after vaccinations began, after people began figuring out there was extra vaccine that could possibly mean that millions more people could be vaccinated. Because if there's two more vaccinations in a five vaccine vial, that's actually a 40% extra. That means 40% of Americans being vaccinated. An Atlantic writer by the name of Jim Yon, I think, remarked that there's a huge gulf between the word vaccines and the word vaccinations. And at the Atlantic, he's penned an article talking about the fact that the vaccination effort is vastly underfunded by the maggots. And yet, over at the Veterans Administration, the Department of Veterans Affairs, according to CBS Radio or Radio.com, Radio.com got hold of an internal VA memo that said that they are, quote, planning to discard additional doses of the coronavirus vaccine from Pfizer vials that arrived overfilled, despite Food and Drug Administration guidance to use all doses during the public health emergency. At the VA, the maggot acolytes there acting under orders said that, well, if we use the extra doses, we might not get future more doses of the vaccinator. Connecting Vets got hold of a memo that said VA officials don't want medical staff to administer more than the five doses per vial, and any additional doses should be discarded. And that memo was sent out to pharmacy chiefs at VA pharmacies this morning. Now, bear in mind, one of the first places that we learned just how awful the coronavirus is, COVID-19, was a veteran's home in Massachusetts, where it took a horrible toll. And so we're going to throw away vaccine because you're afraid you might not get more if everybody gets. It's a two-stage vaccine, for fuck's sake. Oh, and by the way, yesterday, Wednesday, the 16th day of December, 2020, almost 4,000 Americans died from COVID-19. We have passed the 310,000 dead mark. We're only 140,000 away from the number of people killed in the opioid epidemic. And some shit-for-brains maggot is telling pharmacies to throw away a precious, life-saving vaccine. Yeah. Really and for true. And some good news, good news to round out the program. Mike in Cascadia said, Bob, this is huge. It brings tears. And I had seen it earlier, and I'm grateful for the reminder, because it is huge news. I dare say it almost feels like a little bit of justice. We now know who is going to head the Department of the Interior. And this is 500 years worth of, this is a little dot of justice on a 500-year stain. Representative Deb Haaland of New Mexico tweeted, a voice like mine has never been a cabinet secretary or at the head of the Department of Interior. Deb Haaland is an indigenous person. She's Native American. She tweeted, growing up in my mother's Pueblo household made me fierce. I'll be fierce for all of us, our planet, and all of our protected land. I am honored and ready to serve. And I'm excited. Maybe, for the first time in this country's history, we'll actually listen to the people who successfully lived here for 10,000 plus years on how to be stewards of this place. Maybe Deb Haaland will be able to right some wrongs. I hope she will. And I can only imagine the shit hemorrhages taking place among people like Mitch McConnell at the idea that an indigenous woman may say no to the frackers and the pipeliners and the poisoners and the killers. There's been some exciting news, and that is among the most exciting. On the other hand, because I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of fucking sunshine, we began the program talking about the kerfuffle over Jen O'Malley Dillon referring to Republicans as fuckers. Well, we can't be tough as nails on Republicans for very long before somebody has to apologize. And so there it is. In a conversation with veteran Democratic operatives Stephanie Cutter and Teddy Goff, Jen O'Malley Dillon said she, quote, used some words that I probably could have chosen better. So it's, she didn't even, it wasn't, it, we, I gave the context on this. It was nothing to apologize for. She said, the point I was really making is an incredibly important point, and that really is about the president-elect and why he was supported by over 81 million people and what they were looking for. Joe Biden has a belief that we can get things done, and we can get them done if we come together. The story comes from Politico, and Politico, meanwhile, said, O'Malley Dillon's crass remarks. You stupid fox! At Politico, Jesus Christ, who wrote that phrase? How did that reach print, her crass remarks? The article is by Quint Forgy. Her crass remarks. Hey, Quint, did you just get off the turnip truck, Quint? Did you happen to notice the remarks of the maggots over the last 4 years? Fuck your feelings, Trump 2020. I wonder if Quint Forgery's written any articles about the maggot's crass remarks. Is there an article talking about the crass remarks of Ted Yoho in Florida when he called Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a fucking bitch? No. Apologies like this are only for Democrats. Because, of course. Let's check in with Jeremy on the way out the door. Hey, Jeremy. Jeremy. Unmute, buddy. For some reason, you're muted. Oh, no, that's me. I'm a bad person. There you are, Jeremy. I had the wrong button up.
Yeah, no problem. On Monday or Tuesday, Lester Holt came on air on NBC to talk about first thing, meaning we crossed the 300,000 mark. And to a lot of Americans, that doesn't seem like a lot of people because it's not a million, 2 million, 3 million. But he said, if I had a list in front of me of all these names and I read them off one by one, I'd be here for 10 fucking days.
Yeah. Yeah, and last night I had the story of the, what was his name, Alex, that psychopath at DHHS who wanted to just let the disease run wild. What he was talking about was letting 6.6 million Americans die. Do you suppose that America would have taken notice if that happened?
Bob, I know maggots who said they would not take this seriously until a million Americans died. Then it would be a problem.
Would it be a problem if any of the millions were like, you know, their kinfolk, or is it just everybody else, Jeremy?
No, it'd be fine. That's God's will, Bob. That's what they said. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die. God takes me when he wants.
That makes me crazy.
And I've heard it time and time again, Bob, over the last year. And still people screaming, I don't want to wear my mask. You can't make me. It's not a big deal. It's not my family, not my problem. I don't know anybody that got sick. I don't know. I mean, was it you yesterday that talked about it? Oh, yeah, it was you who brought up the guy who had tested positive once for it, cleared it, and then called up his family later that month and said, I don't feel good, and died before they got to him.
I don't think that was me, but my God.
Oh, no, yeah. Was that Malloy?
Yeah, I think that was Mike. Yeah.
But here's a scarier thing, and this is something people should keep in mind, is scientists are already saying, God, I don't want to say this because it'll make everyone mad, but they're really afraid that this shot may be ineffective by the time it's fully employed or deployed, because this could very well mutate and they can never catch up to it.
Well, that's been one of my primary concerns all along, ever since I learned that, that it's a coronavirus, and learned that the common cold is caused by the coronavirus, and the reason that there's not a vaccine against the common cold is because it mutates so goddamn much. And so, right, so if you've got, at best, if you've got at least what we know so far, you've got antibody protection for 3 months after you take the second vaccine, after a month after the first vaccine. So you've got 3 months immunity from that. I don't think we can get an entire country immunized in 3 months. And that's what, and if you want to go to the Atlantic and read the article, I highly recommend it. That's what Jim Yawn was getting at. We are not putting sufficient money into the deployment of the vaccine, even though we poured horse gagging money into developing it. We're going to succeed in the creation and fall flat on our faces in the execution. For the sports fans out there, Jeremy, it's one thing to draw up a brilliant football play on the blackboard, and you can sit there and draw it up and show how it's going to work against every possible defensive scheme. And it's brilliant. But then you have to go out and you actually have to do it in a game. And the quarterback drops back, and the next thing you know, he's blindsided and just flat on his back. Planning is nothing without execution. How many football coaches on the losing end of a score have stood there talking to the on-field reporter saying, well, you know, I felt like our problem today was, I mean, we showed up ready to play, but daggum it, we just didn't execute.
Heard it a few times myself.
Or my favorite line along those lines, who was it, John Robinson, an early coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when they were just drop-dead awful, and the reporter sticks a microphone in his face after another humiliating loss and said, Coach, how do you feel about your team's execution today? And John Robinson didn't miss a beat, and he looked him straight in the eye and said, I'm in favor of it. I love
that. One last thing, and I'll say one last thing, I'll let you go. I mentioned it this fall, but it hasn't stopped. If you use PayPal, if you get a message saying we need to verify your account from anybody, don't fucking listen to them. It's scammers. I get them a couple times a month, and I forward them to PayPal. And don't pay attention. They're never on my account. Like I said, you know two of my email addresses, but the scammers know one of them. And they always send it to the wrong one.
Ah, damn it. They're all over the place. Something happened with the election. It's like these outfits quit monitoring. I go into Instagram now, and I have to block 5 or 6 bullshit accounts a day. And usually it's porn or softcore porn, like no block, no block. And the same thing's happening on Facebook.
Oh, no picture, no followers, but they seem to right. Follow you suddenly.
Yeah. Because naturally.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Bob, well, you have a good night.
Hey, you too, Jeremy. Take care.
Sure.
Thanks for everything, my friend.
Yeah, no problem.
Bye now. Jeremy in Vermont. And that will close the program. And it's been, I think, a pretty decent program for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I told you we'd have enough thorns for a suit of armor. Yeah, talking about the Deb Holland story, our buddy Jug of Punch jumped in and said, a 500-year trail of tears. Precisely. Precisely. Jude, with a closing note, says, listening this evening reminded me of Norman Rockwell's mastery and his honed and intricate vision conveyed onto canvas. Wow, what an incredibly vast array of subject matter he fashioned, very much like the Horn community, vast and varied. The aliveness of each gently invites one to wait for the portraits to literally take that first breath. So like Andrew Wyeth, inspiring beyond words. The one below sits high on a pedestal of human dignity, and its visualizing of the young child just going to school opens one's internal shutters of painful truth. And she sends me a copy of the Norman Rockwell painting of a little black girl off to school being guarded on her way into class, into the school building. By full-grown adults who had to be there to keep her from being harmed. So, thanks, everybody. Thank you to our subscribers at Patreon and PayPal. Remember, there are two new subscriber challenges out, courtesy of Steve in New York. Might take a while to get the stuff to you, but you will get it. Check back in earlier in the program for the description. Thank you to our Patreon, PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And I got to tell you, from a personal standpoint, it feels so good to see people being nominated for positions in this administration that we know that we can finally have something resembling a meaningful conversation with and make our concerns known. It's wonderful. As I noted earlier, we passed 310,000 dead from this pandemic. Please stay safe. Don't take risks. The best way to stay safe is to stay home as much as you possibly can. If you have to be out, wear your mask, wear your gloves. Don't touch your face. Wash your hands. Use hand sanitizer. Take it with you everywhere you go. Maintain your social distances. If everybody's wearing a mask, 10 feet apart. If there's somebody not wearing a mask, you don't want to be in the same county with them. And for God's sakes, if somebody comes towards you saying, "Well, was Joe Biden present when he was talking?" Avoid that person like the plague. Because she is. Later, y'all.